Welcome to the Rated A podcast for the site nerdappropriate.com. We are here for episode 31, and Ash is back.
Hey, I'm back. Hey, what's up, guys?
How's it going?
I'm back.
You are?
Oh, I just flew in.
And
I'm tired.
Oh.
I think there's more to that joke, right?
So you were gone for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I was gone for 3 weeks.
You did some mountain time?
Yeah, my folks have a cabin up in western North Carolina, so I went up there for about a little over a week, ran around in the hills like a serial killer.
Yeah.
And then we flew out of Asheville to San Diego Comic-Con.
Sweet.
And that was fun. And then we went to Hawaii.
Where your best friend got engaged.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was sort of expecting it, even though he hadn't told me anything. But he proposed like right before we got there. So by the time we landed in the plane, they were already engaged, which was pretty cool.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
He's one of the last.
He is.
He's one of the last.
He actually pretty much is. There's only one other.
Derek. So how are you guys?
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Doing pretty good.
Yeah.
What's been going on? What have you been doing?
Me? I don't know why, but I watched Modern Family from episode 1 of season 1 till episode 24 of season 2.
Wow.
Like back to back over the past week.
Wow, man.
I don't know why. I love that freaking show. I literally could do it again tomorrow. I could watch both seasons through again.
It's pretty damn funny.
I love sitcoms. Like, really, just it's just one of those things. I don't know. Like, the sitcoms that no one else can tolerate, I've watched just endlessly. Like, Everybody Loves Raymond and, Seinfeld. And, Jesus, I don't even know. All the ones on TBS. King of Queens. Done that one a lot.
Really, man?
I remember you watching
a lot of that, the King of Queens.
When I worked from home, they played blocks of, like, TBS would play blocks of that for like 4 hours every day. So for 4 hours every day, I watched, what's the other one? There's one about,
Full House.
No. It's about, two families and like the brother's broke. So he lives out back and,
just the 10 of us.
No. Those are all really old.
Did it come
old
on right after King of Queens? That
it
show?
Came on. Yeah. Like yeah. It was like, oh shit. I can't remember it. I'll think of it later. But anyways, I love sitcoms. So Modern Family, I feel like, is a sitcom, but actually is really good. Like, it's way better than any one of those, with the exception of maybe Seinfeld. I think it's easily the best sitcom that's been out.
Yeah, it's pretty damn good.
You know, I don't even know how long.
I would have to agree with you.
But that, playing Bastion, I got to finish it. And then working, doing some site stuff.
Cool.
That's about it.
Awesome.
How about you?
I finished Bastion.
Yeah.
It was good.
Twice?
I think I would play it again, though. It's a lot of fun. It's really good.
Is it?
Let's see. A long time ago, I've been trying to get rid of, like, the stack of games that I haven't played yet.
Yeah.
Sort of in anticipation of the Old Republic, where I assume that I'll never play anything else ever again. So I thought, like, why not just get rid of everything I had? So a long time ago, during one of the Steam sales, I bought the LucasArts Adventure Pack.
Interesting.
So
which is the old school.
Yeah, the old school point and click adventures. Yeah. So
is Grim Fandango on there? Or no,
it was. It's two Indiana Jones games, Loom and The Dig, and I played The Dig and I finished it.
See, I thought you'd reference The Dig to it. Or no, The Ship.
The Ship is
right. That's a different game entirely.
That's like a Steam Engine, like first person spy game. But The Dig is kind of cool. It's like a Steven Spielberg backed project with it's fully voiced, but I think that was recent that they added that like
in the Steam resale they added voicing. Or
no,
something?
I think like if the game came out in like 90, they put that added voices in 98 or something. One of those things.
Yeah, yeah.
The music is incredible, and some of the dialogue, I told you this, is written by Orson Scott Card, who does the Ender's Game series.
Oh, I did that too. I finished Speaker for the Dead. That was the only thing I did.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Did you like it? It's different.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like it for the same reasons I liked Ender's Game.
It's a different, totally different book. You know, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, like, totally different thing is going on. You know?
Yeah. It's so, like, the end of the, it was slow.
Yeah.
The first half of the book is really slow. Like, mm-hmm. it's just super, super slow. And then when they actually, like, kick in the action, when something actually happens on the planet, then it gets, like, super exciting. And then it's great.
Right.
I think from the moment, Andrew Wiggin.
Yeah.
I think they tell you right away, Ender. From the moment Ender lands on the planet, is when the book, like, really kicks into gear. And
right.
kinda reads a lot better.
Cool.
Lots of Portuguese.
Yeah, of course.
Just sprinkled, like,
that's what he likes to do.
Sugary topping all over the book.
That's the thing that I knew for certain was going to happen in The Dig, is that there was going to be some, like, alien language that
right.
I could not ever decipher in the game, and that happened.
That happened.
And I also started playing Infamous, the first one, as part of, like, the Sony We're Sorry package.
Yes,
I got it for
free.
It's hard not to draw comparisons to Assassin's Creed, to that game.
Yes.
And I feel like because of it, that game, Infamous, suffers because of that.
Well, it's not a melee-based game, so you have like, you have really
weird,
loose free running, where you basically, like, hop up walls.
I hit the X button a lot to jump.
Yeah, constantly.
Yeah.
And then you have a weird third-person shooter
mechanic.
Does
it do, like, the because I really feel like Assassin's Creed nails the free running, where, like, you can you hold
different.
A button down and just kind of start free running.
This game suffers from some problems with, like, the environment working against you.
Yeah.
Where in Assassin's Creed, it's pretty obvious what you can and cannot climb on.
Right.
And it's not
white towels.
Yeah, that's not it's not always the case in Infamous. You see something that looks like a window, and it's, like, nothing.
Didn't it seem like in Assassin's Creed, in the first one, they were like, look for the white towels so you know where your blankets or whatever the hell they were.
Yeah.
And then by, like, the third one, they were just like, just fucking run up walls.
We
don't even care.
Yeah.
Like, we've littered some white things throughout the stage, but
I'll tell you a move that that Assassin's Creed has, that Ezio has, that the other guy doesn't. And that's the ability to jump, like, outwards. You know, like, if you're climbing up a wall and you need to just, like, maybe, like, something is a foot above and behind you, like, that guy has not mastered that move in Infamous. So sometimes you have to, like, jump yourself out of a building to jump back up to a ledge. Yeah.
Huh.
It happens occasionally, but it's a fun game. And you played the second one, right?
Yeah, they actually improve a lot of that in Infamous too. And they actually implement a bit of a melee system with some combos and, like, finishers and stuff like that. Two is just overall a better
experience.
Let me
ask you a question about two. Is it as, like grindy and, like, monotonous? I felt like I spent a lot of time doing those, like, side quests so far.
No, it's much more streamlined.
Cool.
Yeah, it's much more streamlined. There's a lot, the story's a lot richer, characters are better. You definitely get a feel for, like, Zeke and the main cast in the second game.
Yeah, that's cool.
It improves, and, like, you end up really liking the universe and being like, okay, this is, you know, the situation's a lot more dire than just a dork with powers.
The game is beautiful, and at times runs, like, I think at 1080p at, like 60 frames or whatever the display supports. Like, sometimes it's super
smooth, it looks great, and 2's even better,
cool.
So definitely play that when you get a chance.
Yeah. So, and I'm still reading that McGonagall book that we talked about many moons ago.
Yep.
It's good.
From PAX.
Digging it.
So other than getting home, have you been up to anything?
I guess we're going to talk
about,
about
Comic-Con
later.
Yeah,
we'll do a big Comic-Con explosion. But let's see. I'm playing Star Wars The Old Republic. Yeah. It's good. I can't really say anything.
Do you really
other
need
that.
To say anything other than that?
Scott, yeah, like, Scott will like it.
Yeah.
What else did I play?
Did you join the dark side, or are you?
I played a little bit of everything.
Yeah,
cool. I'm trying out all the classes. I'm trying not to get them too high because I don't want to ruin the stories.
Yeah,
so I have stuff to play.
You got
to
play with us, man.
I know, exactly. Yeah. But trying out all the classes, liking them all. They're all pretty cool.
Awesome.
And, also
we all did our pre-order, so hopefully we'll September, right, is when they're going to start releasing that.
I think they said so. September.
And they actually did get cut off, and pretty quickly. I think within the first day of pre-orders, they cut off how many they're going to send out.
The big box or early invites?
The early invites.
Oh, cool.
So, because I saw on Reddit there were some people complaining that they pre-ordered, but it was like halfway through the day or three quarters of the way through the day, they pre-ordered, and it was already, they were getting messages that were like, you may never see the pre-order bonus, so...
But I mean, that's like just a matter of like a week or two, right? The 2 weeks.
You probably get a nice head start. A couple weeks.
I'm gonna get more than that, I think, right?
I don't know.
They have still no date yet, right?
Well, they said definitely before
Christmas.
Next year, so right. It's gonna be, you know, probably sometime in December.
I'm gonna set up all of my harvesters on the richest resources
as
soon as I get in the game.
There you go. What else? I picked up Dragon Age Legacy.
Cool.
I was trying desperately. I saw you put it down for review, and I was like trying desperately to beat it this afternoon. I didn't get through it.
Okay.
But I'm pretty far, so I think we can...
Well, you beat it, though.
We could talk about it
briefly.
We can
almost talk about it.
Spoiler free.
Yeah. And what else? Oh, games. Yeah, I didn't really play too many games for about 3 weeks other than the stuff I played at Comic-Con, but we'll talk about that in a bit.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go ahead and jump in because I know the Comic-Con stuff's going to take a while. So the first thing I wanted to bring up is Google Plus. Been out for, I think, 3 weeks now or four? No, longer than that. Probably 5 weeks. And in that time, they have surpassed 10 million users.
Crazy.
Which is skyrocketing fast. I mean, granted, they're Google, so, you know, they just kind of go like, hey, we have a thing, and everybody's like, oh, shit, and jump on it. But there was charts about like Twitter versus Google and Facebook versus Google and how long it took for them to get to 10 million. I mean, in the scope of things, Facebook has something upwards of 550 million users, so 10 million is not really as gigantic as these things can get, as we've seen, but it's still a pretty big chunk. But there's been news. The biggest thing is that Google kind of releasing it to people. People started freaking out. And then, of course, the first thing that started happening was brands. So the big one was Mashable, I believe, jumped on and made a Mashable Google Plus. Not too long after, Google was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We haven't really figured out what we're doing with brands yet. So they just removed them. Literally. Just removed them from existence.
Delete.
Yeah.
So right now only people can.
Only people can. But here's where, which, you know, you might think to yourself like, oh, well, that doesn't seem like a big deal. What does it matter? Well, they set down rules. So now if you try to sign up for Google Plus, if you have any kind of name, as far as like if you are Dr. Scott Osaski, that is not allowed in Google Plus right now. You cannot sign up as Dr. Scott Osaski.
Does that make you a brand?
Because they're trying to decipher what a brand is and what it isn't. And it's basically caused a huge backlash. And then the other problem is that what's ended up happening is these magazine sites or newspapers that did try to create things and then got blocked or got removed, basically just said like, hey, intern, your Google Plus accounts now are into Google Plus, and they're feeding all of their stuff through people. So there's still someone doing it. It just doesn't have the brand on it. It just has a person outputting, like, you know, all of the Sentinels articles or whatever.
Right.
Come through a person. So,
interesting.
So they're working on it. You are not in Google Plus yet.
No.
I sent you an invite, but you haven't done it.
I haven't signed up.
You are in Google Plus. I just wanted, based on this kind of news that Google has visibly said, you know, like, hold on. And granted, like you said to me today, that some band started following you and you were like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? They haven't figured it out yet. Like it wasn't like they went to, cause obviously what deciphers a real name versus a brand. So they haven't figured out how to get rid of everyone yet, but they are slowly going through and trying to eliminate as many of the brands as they can until they decide how they're going to let brands in. But what is your experience so far with Google Plus? How are you? Do you like it? Do you not use it? Do you see it? Are you on Facebook more than Google Plus? Or
well,
are you?
I don't really use any of that stuff a lot, but you know, I do. I mean, I do look at it. Like, I look at all of it, really. But I could see myself using Google Plus more just because I have Google stuff. You know, like I feel like right now in this climate, you're always gonna you kind of have to have a Facebook or at least squat on your name or whatever, you know, just to have a page for yourself. So, I don't know. I think Google Plus is all right. And I kind of like the idea of not having brands, you know, like I can follow brands on Twitter and like them on Facebook.
I mean,
Facebook
they have
whatever,
not
you know?
Said that there's never going to be brands. They just said they don't know how they're going to handle brands.
But that's fine. I'll just block that stuff. I don't like a lot of brands on Facebook. I use that just for friends really. So, and like Twitter is really the place where if I'm really interested in what, you know, Sobe Lifewater is doing, I'll follow them, you know, like on Twitter, I guess. I don't know.
That's really interesting. And before I get to that, I wanted to see, so what is there something that's, I mean, granted, I think you left pretty quickly after I sent you the invite, so you haven't really been around, but is there anything that's holding you back from doing it? Is it signing up for a Gmail account that you don't want to do, or is it?
No, I mean, I think I technically have a Gmail account with my NeuroAppropriate account, right? Isn't that
that stuff's not, that is a Google account.
Okay.
But those branded accounts aren't allowed into Google Plus.
Okay.
Yet.
I think it's more, at this point, I don't really understand what the benefit of it is going to be. If I sign up for Google Plus, I love the idea of having a smaller community and having it be more manageable and not have to worry about, you know, just ridiculous information getting out about me. And I think that's great. But also it seems like, okay, now I have to upload a bunch of new photos. And I got to set up all, I mean, it's just basically laziness. Like, I don't want to go through all those effing menus and have to sit there and be like, you know, age, blah, blah, blah. I'm just like fucking over it. Like, I've done that a billion times already since the days of Makeout Club in the 90s.
God, I will say that I feel like the sign up process for Plus was a lot easier than the Facebook one, and it might be because they already had information from my Gmail account. They already had like some profile stuff, so they were just like, hey, you're Matt, you're this old, and you know, you live in Florida. Like, they kind of knew that already. So I didn't really have to fill a lot out, and the picture thing is all Picasa, so it really depends on where you keep your pictures already anyways.
Okay,
that has been a big wall for me because I have all of my photos on Flickr. Like, a lot of photos on Flickr, and it's been like, there's tools to help you move it from one to another, but I just don't really know if I'm going to do it yet or not. But, I am the same way as you are, Scott. I actually, Twitter has become almost like a news feed.
Yeah.
Slash, like, my friends are on there and I read stuff that my friends put up, but it's really become the place for noise for me, but like noise that I'm interested in. Like, you know, I follow accounts that I want to follow, that I want to see that noise, you know, like I want to see what BioWare posts or what Marvel or DC posts. Like, that's the stuff that I read, but it's like, at the same time, I don't mind, like, I'll follow random people because I know they're posting about things I like, even though I don't know them. Whereas on Facebook, I feel like Facebook has just become a glut to me and I don't know how to fix it anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I totally understand that.
It's gotten to this point where I have 400 friends and I'm like, I don't have 400 friends. I don't know why I like a bunch of crap that I don't necessarily like.
It's like you have to go and prune like your friends.
It's just grown out of control and I don't really know how to handle it at this point. And Plus felt like was like, if you're going to move to a new house and just be like, fuck it, I'm not bringing anything with me. Like, it was just like, I'm going to go over here. And if you guys all find me, that's cool. Otherwise I'll be over here.
It's like when you move with your buds and you just leave a bunch of shit out. Yeah. The guy to pick up. Like,
that's what it felt like. Cause you showed up at Plus, it was like clean and like, it was like quiet. And the only things you saw were the things that you wanted to see, you know? And
no, I really liked that idea.
I think that was what the big draw was.
I think all of us have said in previous podcasts that it gets really annoying when you have coworkers and stuff on your Facebook account and you feel like obligated to kind of like be chummy with them and you don't necessarily want to.
Right.
And they, like, you know, they'll run into your office or whatever and take a picture of you with like a hoagie in your mouth and then they'll be like tagged and you're like, all of a sudden there's this shitty picture of you floating around the internet and it's just like, come on.
And that's what I think Plus really nailed with the idea of these circles. It's just that I've also realized that it can get out of hand really quick if you don't, like, I have like 90 people in my friend circle and I'm like, ooh, that's more than I probably really want in my friend circle, and I've been hesitant to post certain things.
You're gonna have to create like nine circles.
I'm gonna make like a super buds, you know, and like
nine circles of hell for your friends. Yeah.
So, anyways, I just wanted to bring that up, kind of an update on Google Plus. I thought it was interesting that Google, you know, ran into this kind of issue right away by eliminating all the brands. Of course, all the brands freaked out. I mean, like, and of course they're cutting off media outlets.
It's a chance to start over though for Google. They're like, it's like fresh start. They can decide right now what they want to do.
Know? It was interesting that they cut off the exact people that do the PR for the products they put out. They were like, hey, thanks, but no, we're not including you yet.
Yeah.
And those were the people that freaked out and kind of started writing articles. But I just thought I'd bring that up and kind of talk about it real quick. And, we'll move on to the next bit. The next bit is a twofer.
Twofer.
It's a twofer. Two things happened this week. Two big things that the internet, as it loves to do, exploded over. And two entirely separate communities exploded over basically the same thing, which is weird.
Yeah.
One of them made national news, and the other one did not so much.
Made nerd news.
But let's do the nerd news one first.
Okay.
Because that related directly to Comic-Con. We actually posted about this on the site when it first was happening and on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
You can go ahead and take it from here, the Mass Effect.
So yeah, I'm not going to dive too much into the actual big reveal and all that stuff. I'll do that a little bit later. But the big thing was the community got to choose what the official female Commander Shepard looks like in the game Mass Effect. So if you're not familiar with Mass Effect, Commander Shepard's typically portrayed as a male, but you have the option of choosing a female avatar as Commander Shepard. They said something like only about 17% of the players actually play a female, so they never thought we would use a female for marketing purposes. But those 17% of players that play the female Commander Shepard were very, very vocal about wanting to see, you know, what BioWare would do with a female Commander Shepard for their marketing, and just, you know, kind of just wanted to see what would happen. And so BioWare listened, and they said, okay, well, we're going to give you an official female Commander Shepard. We're going to put her on the cover of the Collector's Edition for Mass Effect 3, March 6th, right? And then what we're going to do is we're going to have a Facebook contest, and you're going to get to vote, and whoever gets the most votes is going to be the official female Commander Shepard. So within a few days... it was pretty much already over. The blonde-haired, blue-eyed Commander Shepard had more than, I think, double the votes of some of the others. Mm. And it was more or less a landslide. Now, BioWare hasn't officially announced a winner yet, but it looks like the blonde is going to win.
Well, I have a question then.
Yes.
Why would you hire a bimbo to pilot a spaceship?
See, that,
I think you've perfectly encapsulated the problem.
That was the internet's reaction. And the thing I was kind of most surprised about with the whole, you know, what Matt just said is that was like a lot of people really felt that way.
And women and guys alike. I mean, it wasn't just like dudes like, ooh, what the fuck, or just women. It was like just this weird swath of people that were like, I would want a stupid, weak bimbo for a lead. And it was like, what?
Yeah. And like most of their faces of the six you got to choose from were more or less identical.
Yeah, it was just about. And their same, bodies, everything was like pretty much identical.
Yeah, it wasn't like the blonde had bigger breasts or like, you know, anything like that. It was like very subtle differences. And it was literally just the, you know, the color of her eyes and the color of her hair.
Yeah.
And people freaked out. And they're like, Commander Shepard is not a blonde. She's not a bimbo cheerleader. She is not a prom queen. She is a soldier. And it's like, soldiers can't be blonde. You ever hear of the Nazis? Like, what? Hello?
And that's what...
That's random.
I'm just saying, they were soldiers.
But that's what kind of blew me away was, like, to me, it opened up this kind of psychological look into the fact that people really view blondes as weaker. I've never really... I know the old joke is that they're dumber, but that, like... that they're dumb and weak and generally worse for a job like this than ill-suited
to save the universe, which is a general.
But let me ask you a question, because I thought about this after all this broke out about maybe why this reaction was what it was. Do you think the reaction would have been the same if like Jennifer Hale would have been like, I like the blonde one, so that's the one that we put on the box?
You know, I don't know. I feel like it would have. I feel like it wasn't the fact that people. I think the over-sexualized viewpoint was based on the fact that people voted. I think the viewpoint that she's weak and dumb had nothing to do with the vote and everything to do with the fact that she had blonde hair. Because that's what came up over and over again. It was like, why the hell would I vote for or want to pilot the ship as a blonde-haired, blue-eyed? Mind you, you don't have to play as the one that they're picking either, which is
I was never mad to see the default male Shepard in Mass Effect. I just changed it.
Right.
To a female,
and that's,
you know,
that's what we went to dinner last night. We were talking about that. I was like, shouldn't I be mad then that the default Shepard is like a gorgeous built model who's like this ridiculous dude
Matthew Fox
that I will never look like in my life.
Seriously,
no matter what I do, I will never be what the default male Shepard looks like. And that's the one I play as, you know, but I don't use the default, but it's like, I don't know, the whole thing. Just
I read a really funny comment about the blonde Shepard though. Like, I think somebody on one of the major gaming blogs wrote something like, she looks like, you know, like she was mad that her iPad 2 fell out of her Acura, like, you know, before her sweet 16 birthday party or something. She's mad about it. You know, like, I saw a lot of stuff like that. And I think that kind of sums up the reaction a little bit.
I think the real like fervor broke out. PC Gamer actually put out the article that really started all this. And PC Gamer is a major nerd outlet. I mean, this is not like Nerd Appropriate says that blonde Shepard's stupid. Yeah. This is like a real, you know, fucking magazine. PC Gamer put out an article called Death to Blonde Shepard.
Wow.
And it was a really, really negative look on why, why Shepard should not be a blonde. So it was pretty interesting. So I urge you guys listening, just go in Google and type in Death to Blonde Shepard, and there's a whole great article. that talks all about, you know, the negative aspects of why she shouldn't be a blonde. And then we kind of wrote our own responses as to why it's okay for her to be a blonde. So
I was actually surprised, because I thought that given the community, or maybe people that I thought would vote, I really thought that the one that was going to win was the one that got the least amount of votes, which was like the NCIS, like short, you know, like straight bang, black haired one.
That was actually, you know what? And I said in the article, I picked the blonde shepherd, just because I was like, oh, cool. And like the shepherd I play is blonde, and I'll pick the blonde one. But that the one with the straight bangs was my second choice, because she just looked tough as hell.
Well, like, she looked a little goth, and I was like, well, people that play, you know, it just, I made a general assumption about Mass Effect players, and I was just like, they'll pick that one, you know?
Yeah. But that's like least, right?
Yeah. And I'm surprised, because in forums, and maybe this is just like self-serving, like self-fulfilling prophecy, but I thought that I saw a lot of screenshots of the red-haired shepherd. So I also wouldn't have been surprised to see the red-haired one win.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case either. It's really surprising overall, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And Penny Arcade did an article on it and a cartoon on it, or a comic.
The cartoon was funny.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
But I think in the end, like, it's marketing and it worked, because we're talking about it and everybody's talking about it. So everybody knows that this game is coming out. So,
and everyone's going to play their own shepherd anyway.
Yep, exactly. You know?
It's like, what's the point? So you'll have a box with a blonde shepherd on it.
And speaking of blonde haired, blue eyed heroes,
he's not actually blonde.
Oh no, this has nothing. This is totally different. Okay.
So the other big news that came out, actually yesterday, is, that, a little while ago, in issue 160 of Ultimate Spider-Man, Peter Parker died.
Can you tell me how? Spoiler alert, because I haven't ever read Ultimate Spider-Man.
I didn't actually read it. I wasn't a reader of Ultimate Spider-Man. I know how he died. I don't know exactly. I know who killed him. It was Green Goblin killed him.
Well, yeah, that's who has to kill him.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that...
Did he fall from a very high place?
I don't know. He died in the arms of Mary Jane.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah. And Green Goblin killed him. I actually don't know. And then at some point, Reed Richards goes crazy, too.
Really?
Yeah, the whole Ultimate series is just going like nuts. Bendis is just doing what he wants with it.
This is definitely like fourth hand information, but I thought they were shutting down all the Ultimates. Like
they're doing the DC reboot.
Yay. Okay.
So everything's going back to number one.
All right.
So what happened yesterday is, in a series called Ultimate Fallout, which is like the end of the Ultimate series before the reboot. I don't know if they're going to keep the Ultimate name. I thought they were, because it's like it's a different universe essentially in Marvel that can kind of have whatever. That's why the whole reason Ultimate started was so that they could kind of forego the years and years of, you know, things that they would have to retcon to like figure out how to write around and just have a brand new series. So what happened in number four, and you guys have now all seen it, is Spider-Man shows up again, beats up a bad guy, and is unmasked to reveal that he is a half black, half Latino young guy named Miles Morales.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you would think would be the reaction. Well, and I will say what I want to separate here when we talk about what happened in literally the day since this has come out is... basically, I think comic fans, I think hardcore Spider-Man fans have the room to be like, I don't know that I want another Peter, like another Spider-Man. I like Peter Parker. Like, that's fine. That's a normal reaction to have as a comic fan. What happened is, I don't know how else to put it other than some of the most racist things I've ever seen in my life just start coming out about Spider-Man being half black and half Latino. I mean... There was a lot of positive review, but there was a lot of negative review, and from places that you just like wouldn't even think would have anything to say about comics. The big one that I posted on my personal Twitter today was that Glenn Beck on his radio show brought up the comic, basically railed on it for about 2 minutes, saying that comics are dumb and that he doesn't even care about this. He doesn't even care about this. And then says... Then turns out, he also says he doesn't care that he's gay, and he's not gay. What happened, or it hasn't been revealed as to whether he is gay or not, but the writer on the series, not Bendis, but maybe it was the artist on the series, said, you know, I don't think the point of what Spider-Man is whether he's black or gay or Latino or anything. What the point is that he's Spider-Man. You know, like that's the end, that's what the point is at the end of the day, not who he is underneath the mask. But Glenn Beck alluded to the fact that this is all part of a conspiracy started by Michelle Obama to basically inject homosexuality and blacks and Latinos into the American culture.
I think that he just gets paid to make inflammatory comments.
Well, of course. And the way he says it is, he didn't literally say that. You know, of course he's like, is this Michelle Obama saying that we should all be black and Latino? I don't know. I don't know. You know, like, it's like that
kind
of ridiculousness.
As long as you say anything with a question mark at the end, it's...
I didn't know if Michelle Obama, I didn't know she was in charge of Marvel Comics.
Yeah, she was. She dictates their stories.
Obama Comics.
He also said... It's kind of amazing that he looks a lot like Obama, isn't it?
Oh boy.
or not at all.
That's amazing.
So anyways, it was a lot of that. It was a lot of what's the right word? Invective? Is that the right word? Or whatever. And a lot of like negative
erectile dysfunction
response. There's a lot of erectile dysfunction over it. One of the interesting things that came out that I liked a lot was Bendis actually wrote later that the campaign for a black Spider-Man that Donald Glover did didn't actually create this character. He was already, because he had already written the Killed Spider-Man thing and it already started the new character at that point. But what it did do was, he said it basically affirmed everything he was believing. He said when Glover put on the Spider-Man outfit, he was like, that looks awesome. I feel like I'm doing the right thing. Like,
that's cool. Yeah.
So he actually gave big ups to Donald Glover, like in writing, said that he was a big, not influence, but a big inspiration on keeping the character the way he had kind of envisioned it.
Now
got to feel great for Donald Glover.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking awesome to be like, hey, the new Spider-Man is totally, you know, half empowered by you, you know.
It kind of looks a little bit like him too.
I think once that happened, the art probably went a little Donald Glover's way, just to be like, hey,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
we're cool with this.
Let me ask a question now. If this is not, it's Spider-Man, clearly, right?
Well, and also real quick before you say your question, it's only about 4 pages that you see him.
The book.
The book is a full comic, but the actually seeing Spider-Man as Miles Morales is only like 2 or 3 pages at the very end.
Yeah.
And then it leads into a teaser for what is going to be, I thought it was Ultimate. Do you have the book in here?
Yeah, it's right here.
Is the teaser for the number one of the new Spider-Man series, which is, Ultimate Spider-Man.
Okay.
Issue number one.
So this is like a new Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
So what's the big deal if a different guy puts the costume on?
I don't know.
And like, it's not like they're saying like Peter Parker's been black and Latino all along. It's not like they're, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, hey, here's another guy. He's got the costume on. They're going to call him Spider-Man.
I actually think it's kind of cool that they killed Peter Parker and then said like, no, there's a new guy. Like, we've got this new guy who is Spider-Man.
That seems kind of cool.
That means we're not racist, guys. Good job.
I mean, but I don't, like I said before, I don't read a lot of comics, but this has me interested. You know what I mean?
We're also not, you know, living in the gutter and evil people like a lot
of people are on the internet. It just was kind of amazing to me that something of this level brought national attention to Marvel, which, you know, bravo Marvel. I guess they got what they wanted at the end of the day, which was massive press for a new comic book. But at the same time, I thought it was cool because, to be dead honest with you, there aren't really main title black comic superheroes. I mean, there really aren't. There are black superheroes in the comics, and they have relatively big books. But there's not, you know, there was a Black Green Lantern for a little while. There's the Black Panther. They all have black in their name other than the Green Lantern. Like, there's not any, like, you know, Superman, you know, X-Men.
I think it's because it was pretty much social taboo when those characters were created, like in, you know, Silver Age, Golden Age heroes. It was not cool for them to
be any civil rights struggle still then, you know?
Anything other than white. And then you had, you know, people like Chris Claremont, Giant Size X-Men, like, we're going to have a German, we're going to have a black girl, we're going to have a Russian, we're going to have a Canadian, we're just going to mix it all up. So it's and steady.
To me, the culture that we live in now in the U.S., like, I actually think we need a strong black superhero, especially one who's a kid, who's young and dealing with things that, like, you know, I mean, the whole point of Spider-Man was that he was the geek that became a superhero, you know, like, he wasn't a big badass dude. He was a little weakling kid who was a nerd and was way into school books and became something bigger and better, you know? And like, that idea and applying it to another race that definitely, I think right now we're in shitty times, and like, that kind of thing I think could be an awesome inspiration for a kid, you know?
No, I agree.
You know, 8-year-old kid who maybe is black or Latino and maybe growing up in not the greatest part of town right now can pick up a book and read about a kid that overcomes that and becomes a superhero. That's awesome to me. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was a kind of a bravo to Marvel for me. I thought it was a good idea, and I like how they pulled it off.
It just seems like sometimes like things like what we're talking, you know, the Mass Effect and this just kind of brings out the worst of the internet.
It really does.
Reflects poorly, you know, and you kind of makes you feel sad just for being a
part. By the way, how many Netflix articles did you read this week? Oh, none, because no one cares anymore.
Yeah. Like, what happened to that? Yeah.
Stupid.
They're over it.
We're going to be mad about something next week, too. Here we go, you know.
So speaking of price changes.
Nintendo 3DS.
Sorry, I lost my notes here. That's my bad. Professionalism. I think it was earlier this week, the Nintendo announced that they were going to have like a massive price cut on the 3DS. So right now it's $250. Which admittedly is a lot of money, and ended up being even worse because there's no games for it, you know.
And it didn't sell. I mean, they've pretty much publicly said that this is like the worst selling handheld they've ever had.
Yeah,
right?
Well, when you launch a system, it's kind of like a chicken and the egg. It's like you need games to be there, right? But then you need some people to buy the system just because they're excited about it. So, like I said, you know, originally the problem with the launch lineup is that Nintendo put out two games and they were things that you've already seen elsewhere. And then, the third party titles were all just like, you know, half-assed, like short experiences, like 3D only, doesn't use any technology or whatever. So, I don't remember the date, but I want to say it's in, or later this month.
I don't remember either.
The price is going to go down to $170. So that's like an $80 price cut, which is like a pretty big deal because the system's only been out for a couple of months. Obviously they smartly anticipated that a lot of people would be pissed off about it. So,
yeah.
What they're doing is they're saying that anyone that, connects their 3DS system to the Nintendo eShop the day, you know, up until a day before the price changes, they'll be enrolled in what they call, the ambassador program. So what this means is that they're going to give you, I don't know if they're going to give you anything else, but kind of the main part of this is that they're going to give you 10 NES games for free through the eShop, and then they're going to give you 10 Game Boy Advance games through the eShop, and those 10 Game Boy Advance games will never be made available like for sale, you know. So like only the people that have the system now can get those downloadable titles. And then they also announced that when the NES games are released to retail, like e-retail, later that, you know, this year or next year or whatever, they're going to update those titles to have multiplayer Wi-Fi capability for those NES games.
Interesting.
Go ahead.
Should I be the bad guy?
Well, no, I'm going to be the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff to say about it. So
I don't think there's anything bad to say about them dropping their price and giving some free stuff to their customers. Like,
that's great.
That's great.
Well, I mean, Sony or, you know, Microsoft would not do that. I don't think any other company would do that. Like, hey, we dropped the price.
Well, I mean, Apple did it. Like,
what do you mean?
Apple released the iPhone at $600, dropped it to $300 like a month and a half later, and then gave everybody credit in the iTunes store.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Like, I think that's kind of, you have to. I mean, like, you can't sell something at a certain price point and then immediately drop. This is not like a year or 2 years later. This is, you know, couple of months later, drop the price that drastically. People are going to be pissed. That's a kind of a ridiculous price drop. You know, I mean, it's an awesome price drop, but
I think it's too little too late, man. I think, we talked about this before, but the technology, while it was great, like you said, there was no software developed for it. So they went ahead and released this system that has great potential, but no third-party backing. And with no third-party backing, there's no reason to buy it. It's like buying a car with no gas. I mean, it looks pretty, but what the hell are you going to do? Just sit there in the driveway? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and what's weird is that Nintendo has first-party put out a couple of titles, and they're all remakes. You know, like there's a Pilot Wings, which was new, but you know, if you've played Pilot Wings before, it's the same.
Yeah.
Then Zelda, and then Star Fox. So that's already, you know, and Nintendogs. So that's like now four games that are...
I can never hear Nintendogs and not laugh.
But I'm saying that's four games without like a really like a new experience. I mean, although they've announced like a Super Mario Brothers and a Luigi's Mansion 2, which I think would benefit greatly from 3D. It just hasn't existed yet. Or even AR, you know?
Here's my thing is that two things with it. One is here's free NES and free Game Boy Advance games. I have an NES emulator on my phone.
It's very true.
Like on my phone, yeah. Not even on my computer. I can play any NES game I want for free at any point in time. Mm-hmm. And like, I was thinking about this because when I read your article and then I was thinking about it a little bit later, was that I own a DS and I have not picked it up in probably a year, you know, and I've got new games for it too. And I played one of them. Well, no, that's not true. Probably within the last 6 months I've played, what'd I buy?
I think you bought Scribblenauts is what you
told me. I played Scribblenauts.
Yep.
And that was because that was a really distinct experience that you could have on the DS that you couldn't get anywhere else.
Correct.
So like that was a big deal. So I played that. And then, but I play games on my phone. I honestly do. And I never thought I would say that, but now that I've got a better phone that can play games and play good games, like games that are fun and engaging, like, and Penny Arcade actually did a comic that made the point to me that I'd kind of been thinking, and it was like, yeah, but you know, with the 3DS, I can go buy any one of these games and play it and it'll be in 3D. It'll be awesome. And he's like, yeah, but your game's $30. I can buy 30 games on my phone for the same price. Who's going to have more fun? And like the reality is the guy who spent $30 on his phone games is going to have probably months and months and months of fun.
I also like your comment about, I can't really carry my 3DS into the toilet stall.
Yeah. Like seriously, you know, that sounds gross, but like I go take a crap at work and like I play a game on my phone for a little while. And like, what am I walk inconspicuously through the office with my 3DS? Like, don't worry about me. Just going outside for a little bit, everybody.
It's like, that would be frowned upon in your workplace. But if you play the same game on
my
iPhone,
no one cares.
Oh, that's cool. He's just taking a dump. No big deal.
But I just don't know. I just don't know that portable gaming is what it used to be. I'm interested in the Vita or whatever based on horsepower alone. But even then, I don't know that it's really delivering me some kind of unique experience that I'm not getting on my phone.
Well, you know what's coming out on that system. There's going to be an Uncharted game and a Metal Gear game and Mod Nation Racers, Little Big Planet. It's like if you have a PS3...
Funny though, you guys talking about, you know, getting used to playing games on your phone and things of that nature. I tweeted this while I was at Comic-Con, and you know, I've been going there a long time, and I used to see everybody on their DSs, and you'd be able to open up PictoChat.
I think you
and
commented
there'd be,
this
yeah, there'd be like, yeah. PictoChat going on everywhere. I swear I didn't see one PSP, and I maybe saw a handful, maybe honestly, out of 100,000 people that I walk by, literally 120,000 people, I didn't see any DSs this year, maybe one or two.
Yeah.
And I saw tons and tons of iPads and iPhones. I don't know if people
Androids
are just traveling.
And Samsung
that's
pads.
No, but a lot of cell phones, a lot of cell phone gaming. But very little, you know, I think, I don't know if people just wanted to bring less with them. And they're like, I don't need my DS anymore because my phone has a million games that are $1, you know?
Well, right. I mean, dude, I go jogging. I use my phone for music now. When I, you know, like my phone, and honestly, a lot of it's due to the fact that the phone works better now. I have a better phone with more horsepower that works better. But also, I think the biggest thing is, and Apple really pushed this more than anyone, is battery life. Like I can actually use my phone for an extended period of time playing a game or listening to music and still make it home, you know, without just destroying my battery immediately. Mm-hmm. And that used to be to me, well, that's why I would separate it. That's why I would have an MP3 player. That's why I would have a gaming machine.
I see.
Because I don't want to listen to my MP3 player for 4 hours if it's my phone and my phone's dead. Like that's not good for me. But if I can do that and still get home, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think they've really worked on that and made that such a better thing.
I think the way that I view it, or at least in my opinion, is that like overall, like the games on the 3DS should be better than the games on the iPhone.
Yeah.
But are they $250 better? You know, like is that difference so great that you would be like, let me spend this extra money? You know, like the iPhone games, I'm not saying iPhone games are just good enough, but I'm saying they're good to the point where you're not looking for the 3DS. You know, you're not looking to... what's going on?
Infinity.
Ryan tweeted.
Infinity Blade is pretty freaking good, man.
Yeah.
For like
that's what
$5.
Right. Well, and then I've played, there's games that you can get on the Droid market too that were a blast that I've been telling you about that your phone wouldn't run right now. But
can I tell you something really bad?
What?
I don't want to play Android games because there's no achievements.
Oh. Yeah, there's faint. There's no achievements on iPhone. It's
no,
the
there's
same
no
system.
There's no Microsoft achievements is what I'm
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. All right, so Nintendo, we love you, but please do something.
I think I put them on notice in my article. Didn't I do that? Like
they weren't represented at all at Comic-Con.
I wonder why.
At all. There was nothing Nintendo-based at all.
They're weird. They're kind of like, they really are like, I mean, they've always been sort of like a quote-unquote like a toy company because they make like a system and they only put games on it. There's not like, they have Netflix now, but like really now in my mind, I'm like, this really is like a specialty thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because you can game on anything now.
Yep.
So.
All right. Well, we have gone way over on news. So let's take a quick break and then come back. We'll do probably just a couple of reviews.
Sounds good.
And then move to Comic-Con.
Sound good? All right.
All right. All right. We are back with some reviews.
So we played, or Ash and I played the newest Dragon Age 2 DLC, which is Legacy.
I'm going to go read a book real quick.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
You should ask some questions. We actually haven't played any of them, so this would be hard to ask questions.
Did you ever? You didn't play the first Dragon Age as well?
No, I did not.
Well, let me ask you. Yes. How far did you get, and what do you think about it so far?
I believe at the very end.
Okay.
I love it a lot.
Yeah.
I really feel like it kind of harkens back to like a lot of the architecture and a lot of the style of the first game. The fact that you're pretty much in the deep roads for the bulk of it.
Okay, yeah.
I think that I haven't really had on I'm playing on normal and I haven't really had too much of a challenge in combat. Like I haven't died or anything yet. But I hear that, you know, you should probably bump it up to hard if you're a veteran player, which I haven't really been doing.
What do you think about the sort of the combat differences between the first and second game? Do you like the... I feel like a hypocrite because the stuff I did not like about the change from Mass Effect 1 to 2, whatever happened in Dragon Age 1 to 2, I like it, you know?
Well, okay, I didn't love the combat in Dragon Age 1.
Okay.
Like, I thought it was tolerable, but the animations were kind of clunky. It moved a little bit too slowly.
Here's a fun fact. Some people actually enjoy taking turns in discrete event simulation time, meaning they like moving each character to the position, queuing up a move for each character, executing those moves, and then doing it all over again.
Yeah, yeah, and I know there's a lot of people that are huge fans of that.
I'm not one of those people. How about you?
I'm not either. Yeah. It depends. I mean, if there's a really difficult battle, and there are some, even in Dragon Age 2 where you have to do that, specifically the rock boss that pulses, you know, near at the end of the deep roads in Dragon Age 2. You know, there are some bosses that require you to do that kind of micromanagement, but I feel like that's not really fun to do.
It's not for me.
And I think if you're good enough at programming your allies' behavior, you can have them do everything that you would do for them. You know, for instance, if Bethany's surrounded, then you cast this spell and then she's no longer surrounded.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, that I don't mind.
I think we're on the same page there.
Yeah. And the only thing I wish is it's, especially since like I play my main character in Dragon Age 2 is a warrior, two-handed warrior.
Cool.
And I cast haste on myself all the time. Mm-hmm. Mages. So it's unbelievably fast, the combat.
Oh, really?
Like, it is like I can't tell what the blank is going on. So I wish there was a way to scale the actual speed. We are?
Yeah, it's okay.
What the fuck? Game's too fucking fast.
So haste makes the game faster?
Yeah, I just wish there was an old school, like, hey, I want to play this game. At 50% speed right now,
I would do
all my combat.
Oh, so instead of like pausing the game to do all the combat moves, you would rather just maybe slow the game down.
Yeah.
And then execute moves like maybe in a slower real time fashion.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of a cool idea.
Just because the animations are so beautiful and so fluid, I really don't feel like we get a chance to see them as much as we used to because the game was slower.
Yeah, right now, like Dragon Age 2 for me was a lot of like explosions like just like a clusterfuck of just numbers
AOE
and blood
fucking everywhere. You're just like, I don't know what just happened.
Well, I played as a rogue, so I mean, like, it's pretty much the way I play the game, the way that we played D&D with the rogue, and that I'm running all over the battlefield, like assassinating guys, disappearing, reappearing, stealthing, coming back out. What did you think? Did you notice that there was new chatter dialogue between the characters and Legacy?
I did. I loved it.
Who did you take with you?
I took Aveline.
Okay.
I took Isabella, and I took Bethany.
That's a really, yeah, that's pretty heavy for a party to take.
It's pretty cool. I took Aveline and Isabella because their relationship over the course of Dragon Age 2 is really one of the most interesting I found, because they start out really hating each other, and then they kind of become unlikely buddies.
They kind of get into a little like gal talk from time
to time. Yeah, and they always talk about like gross sex and stuff like that, so it's kind of cool.
I for that same reason, I brought Isabella and Meryl.
Oh, nice.
Because I like the way that they treat one another. She's like, Isabella kind of has like this motherly instinct for Meryl.
She does, yeah.
And then Meryl just kind of makes fun of her, or like asks her questions like, how can you sleep with so many people? And yeah. She's like, I do. I'm a pirate. Yar. You know, whatever.
So. Yeah, it's cool. No, the relationships are definitely cool. And did you bring a sibling with you?
Yes, I did.
Did you bring Carver? Did you bring?
No, I'm a rogue, so I had Bethany.
Oh, you had Bethany. Okay.
Did you read the spoilery part of my review, or did you not read it?
I don't recall.
Okay.
I'm pretty deep. I pretty much have an idea what's going to happen. Like, I think I've fully charged my blade. And,
yeah. Okay.
Done all that stuff. So I'm kind of deep into the story. So I think we're pretty
free
to open about that.
Specifically about Dragon Age Legacy. Like, it is cool. Like, you get like a weapon. The weapon, you can customize it sort of.
Yeah.
Like, the battles are fun. The quests are cool. I noticed that you said that the enemies don't like BAMF.
Yeah, they
and
don't.
I kind of noticed that in the main storyline, but I didn't really think it was a problem. But when you wrote it, I was like, oh yeah, like that.
They
really
just kind of phased in, yeah.
Yeah, that shouldn't happen too much.
But. Yeah, there's some cool. They kind of reintroduced the Darkspawn into this game because they were more or less absent from Dragon Age 2, except for a really small chunk of the game. Like you're mainly fighting against the Carta, and then different thug factions. But there's not a lot of Darkspawn, which are obviously the main opponent in Dragon Age 1. So seeing them again, a new variant of them, was really, really cool. And overall, I think it's great. I really enjoy Dragon Age 2, but if Dragon Age 2 was like Legacy, is that what it's in?
Yeah, like more like Legacy?
Yeah, from start to finish, then I would have been...
Because it's kind of like Legacy is almost like a middle ground between 1 and 2.
Absolutely.
Like in terms of like the pacing and the style.
And there's a lot of, like, not to get into total spoiler territory, but there's a lot of really great lore stuff if you're interested in like the world of Dragon Age, dealing with Hawk's family and with like how the Blight begins and what an archdemon really is and things of that nature. So it's pretty cool if you're into the stories.
And let me ask you one more question before you move on. Do you think there will be more DLC for Dragon Age 2 before Dragon Age 3 comes out?
Yeah, I think there's going to probably be maybe, I want to say, two more big ones. I'm just assuming. And I don't know if they're going to do an expansion like Awakening.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they do.
I would play it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I hope they do. I wasn't into one, but two, I'm kind of hooked.
Yeah, a 20-hour, this 20-hour like expansion would be great.
Yeah.
Because, I thought this was great, so I hope they keep making more.
Cool.
I have a question.
Yeah, go for it.
So how old are these dragons in this legacy?
Well, Matt, Dragon Age actually refers to the era in which the game takes place.
Yes, there are different ages.
I think the age prior to Dragon Age was...
Unicorn Age!
Pterodactyl Age.
Pterodactyl Age.
Yes.
Which, if that is a real game, I totally want to play that.
Absolutely.
That was the only relevant question I had.
Okay.
Okay. Well, then I think we're ready to move on. The dragons are old.
Yes, they are.
Is the game system in 2 the same? Because I've been told that I would hate Dragon Age 1 on the Xbox and like Dragon Age 2
Dragon
on the
Xbox. Dragon Age 1... is a PC game.
I hate
game.
Fucking...
It's a PC game.
Yes,
I'm not going to lie. If you can play that game with a mouse and a keyboard, like, you're in, like, sin.
Yeah.
And this game is much more...
Did they release it on the Mac?
I don't even... I think it's on Steam.
It's okay.
I want to say that... I don't want to use the word arcade combat, but the combat is faster.
Would you compare it from the change of Mass Effect 1 to Mass Effect 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, their whole gimmick... for when they were plugging Dragon Age 2 was, when you hit the button, we want something cool to happen. And that's really what happens now. Like, you can, you know, tag each one of your buttons just like in Mass Effect to have a different ability. And then you basically hit it and your guy goes like buck wild. So it's, you know, chaining combos together, doing things of that nature.
Right. To me, this Dragon Age 2 is kind of similar to Jade Empire. I felt like
bringing that damn game up, man.
Because it fucking rules. And BioWare needs to make another one. And that better be what happens after Mass Effect and Dragon Age 3.
All right.
Good Good stuff.
All right. Well, we also, two of us, right? You did not see this?
I'm going to read a book.
Two of us went and saw Captain America. I actually got to see it on the midnight showing of release night because I thought we were going to do a podcast that weekend, and we ended up not doing it, so I didn't get to talk about it. But which was interesting in and of itself. We can talk about that. But we saw Captain America, and what did you think?
I went and saw it, not on opening night, but I went and saw it in a little tiny dinky theater.
Opening night, you were in Comic-Con.
I was. Yeah, I was. That's right.
I think they did special viewings of it, but I couldn't even imagine.
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
Chris Evans was there in his tights, walking around, flexing.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was there doing stuff. But yeah, I went and saw it in a little theater on vacation, and I actually really enjoyed it. I love that period. I love, you know, World War II.
Yeah.
I almost have to say that I liked all the build up to him becoming Captain America almost better than when he becomes Captain America.
Well, do you mean when he become like when he becomes Captain America, like when he's in the war becomes Captain America, or when they actually turn him into Captain America?
I like
the super
it,
soldier.
I loved it all
because there's kind of three phases. There's like.
How about this? I loved it until he got to Europe, and once he got to Europe, I just loved it.
Okay.
Yeah, because all the... Does it make any sense? Yeah, I thought it was great, but like when he got to Europe, I almost felt like it started feeling almost like a little sound stagey. Like it didn't have that big war feel.
I could see that. You know what I mean? Wasn't a war movie, even though it was a war setting. That is true. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he's in the heart of World War II. He's in Europe. He's like, you know, engaging the Germans, and it feels like there's like 50 Germans.
I kind of wrote about that in the review that the montages kind of got to me by the second one.
Yeah.
Cause there's two big montages, and there might even be three total. There's like the, I think without being spoilerish, if you're really worried about knowing anything about, if you haven't seen it yet and you're really worried about knowing anything about this movie, I guess skip like a minute here. But basically the first act of the movie is him before he becomes a super soldier. And it's all about him being weak and little. Kind of what I said about Spider-Man, but in a really weird way. Because it's Chris Evans' face on this, like, complete, like, on, I don't even know, like, this, like, really, like, skeleton-ish, thin, like, little boy's body almost. It was weird. It didn't even look like a little man's body. It looked like a little kid. Like, he was, like, 15 in the body and 25 on a face, you know?
It was really strange.
But anyways, so that's the first act. The second act is him being a super soldier, but not yet really being Captain America. He is Captain America, but not he hasn't done anything.
You can talk about it. I mean, the whole idea was he was the first prototype of the super soldier, and the person that was in charge of the program, something happens to that person, so he can be the only
one.
He's the only one, and he's too valuable to send over there. They're like, no way, this guy's the only one. The secret's kind of locked in his DNA, but this is 40s technology, so they don't really know how they're going to replicate this super soldier serum yet.
So they basically say, we're going to make you a figurehead, and we're never going to actually send you in battle. And he basically does like USO tours.
Yeah, he's like sells war bonds and dances around and stuff like that.
So that's cool. And that was fun. And then the third act is him actually being Captain America, that you know and love Captain America, and fighting the Red Skull and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But what I thought was, and there's two montages, basically the two big montages are him as Captain America fighting and him as Captain America, the figurehead, doing the USO tour. I think that this is the first movie I noticed the montages. I was like, wow,
they were
like long, weird.
They were long, like the fighting montage. It's not just like.
Did it make you wish that you got to see those fights though?
Yes, especially the one that really stuck out. Do you remember the one in the snow?
Yes,
that one was like a 20-second clip jammed into a montage, and you're like, I want to see this whole fight.
I felt like that could be a whole movie.
Yeah,
I felt like they could do a whole movie of him in the Howlin'
Commandos.
Yeah. Because that whole part was just so awesome, and it, I think if this movie lacked anything, I think it lacked from the fact that you could tell they were only going to be able to do one of these before the Avengers.
Yeah,
I think they felt the pressure of going like, we're going to jam two movies into one movie, and because we have to, because we're going to do the Avengers next year, and we know it.
Yep,
I think that was it, because I feel like the him pre super soldier. USO war bonds and then like fighting Hydra could have been a movie in and of itself. And then that last act could have been a whole other movie of fighting Hydra and then actually fighting the Red Skull.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could have been a whole other movie. And I think they realized that there was no way they were going to be able to pull that off. And they just kind of like jammed
maybe
it into
there
one.
Will be a director's cut with longer combat sequences.
I don't know. You think so?
Probably not.
I don't think so. It didn't look like it the way it was shot.
But anyway, so you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
It was fun.
You don't rate stuff, but you said if you did rate stuff, it would be a 10 out of 10.
Could you?
I don't think that's actually what I have to go look at.
Can you rate this movie relatively speaking to previous Avenger films?
I liked it better than Thor in a different way. I still think Iron Man is the best. The first Iron Man
yeah,
is by far the best one they've done. I think it hit all the right notes. It felt great. Like Favreau just like nailed it essentially. But I liked it better than Thor, but it's such a different movie from Thor. It's really hard to kind of compare the two.
Okay.
But yeah, I think this one was above that, below Iron Man, way above Iron Man 2, which was, I think, kind of a failure.
Right. Okay.
Which I think people have, at this point, I think people have almost forgotten that Iron Man 2 actually came out.
Will the casual fan enjoy this movie?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You don't have to know anything about the Marvel Universe at all to like this.
And it's kind of like a World War II kind of movie as well. Yeah. No.
It's more of an Indiana Jones adventure.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Adventure movie.
Okay. There's yeah. not a lot of war. And that's what we were saying. Like the montages,
because
really
that's what
cut
the trailers
the
would lead me to believe.
Yeah, no. What I will say though, and Ryan and I were talking about this today online. I said we don't do ratings, but if we did, I'd give this one a red, white, and blue out of 10. Is that how ratings work?
Oh, red, white, blue. Out
sounds
of 10.
Good. It sounds good.
It's very go USA. Like very go USA. Like you walk out of the movie and you're like, yeah, go USA. Like for no reason whatsoever. It's very patriotic. Like, which it should be. It's fucking Captain America. But like you walk out of it. It's not like you walk out of it and you're like, that was an awesome superhero movie. You kind of walk out like, fuck yeah, we're the Americans, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which by the way was the midnight showing joke, of the day.
Really?
America.
Oh wow.
Which was said 50 times. I don't know. Maybe minimum. Kid behind us thought it was hilarious. The like 12 times thought it was still funny at the
boy.
End of it.
That's unfortunate.
It was pretty unfortunate. The one thing Ryan, what I was going to say though, the thing that Ryan and I talked about that, that I thought they did a phenomenal job of, which is what you don't think about is that in the comics, all of these characters, and I'm including Batman, Green Lantern, Batman, Green Lantern, Superman, Captain America, Spider-Man, these guys are wearing tights in the comics. Like they're wearing literally like almost fabricless, like type of fabricless tights. Like they're drawn very not fabric-y. And I think the challenge for all of these movies has been these costume directors that have to figure out how the hell do they put a real person into a costume that still looks like what came out of the comic without them looking absolutely ridiculous, like as if they just threw some leotards on them, which happens in Captain America. They throw leotards on him at first, and then he gets like his outfit after that. And I think the outfit that he was in when he was fighting was awesome. It was like yeah. dead on.
It was
like,
awesome.
It made me feel like that's what a soldier would wear back then, or even now for that matter, and still pulled off that Captain America look. And I actually saw a promo piece about Chris Evans, or he talked about the shield, that they actually had three different shields. There was a magnetic one, so whenever you saw him put it back on his back, it was actually magnetic. So he put it back and like it would latch onto his back as a
magnet.
That's
awesome.
There was one that had the arm guards in it and was metal, and then there was one that was rubber. So whenever he threw it and hit somebody, that was the rubber one that he was throwing.
That's
amazing.
There
were three different shields. But I thought the costumes, like it was the first time I saw, because Iron Man's not really a costume. It's CG the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, there's a real one, but when he's moving around and stuff, it's all CG. And this one just, I felt like it was awesome. I felt like it just nailed it. I think the only ones that come close are the Batman costumes.
The costuming in general and the set design of Captain America.
The Hydra.
It was awesome.
Dudes were awesome.
Fucking Red Skull's fucking car.
Oh, so good.
Oh, it was so good.
So good.
And all the little weird planes and all that old, like, weird, almost kind of steampunky.
We said that, I think you and I agreed that the period stuff was like
yeah,
by
was
far
good.
Our favorite stuff in the movie. They just nailed the tone, I feel like, and they nailed the set and they nailed the costumes and all that stuff was so good. And the acting was good. Like, thank God Chris Evans left fucking Fantastic Four or whatever else he was doing to do this, because
yeah.
he's meant to, like, maybe at first I might have been like, I don't know, he's a little too cocky to be Captain America. But then when I saw him in Captain America, I was like, oh, perfect. Like, nailed it. I felt, at least.
No, yeah. He was good. I thought he was good in Fantastic Four.
Well, yeah, but I mean...
But the source material.
You can put a turd inside a Fantastic Four.
Anyway, Captain America, it was good. It definitely kind of paves the way for, hopefully, a great Avengers story. And I actually have a little bit of Avengers news out of Comic-Con, a little bit, tiny.
All right, well, do we need to take a break?
I'm good.
Good?
I'm good to go.
Good. I think what we're going to do before we get into the Comic-Con news is do our questions... which are all leaning towards Mass Effect, which tells me a lot about what our followers like.
Yeah.
They are. Nailed the Mass Effect followers.
Hopefully we keep getting more too. So,
you want to ask them or do you?
Let's start out with a question from Stumpy Nat.
Okay.
Stumpy Nat, by the way, is a frequent tweeter with us.
Yes.
And she tweets us.
She's an awesome icon.
Yes, she does.
Batwoman.
She asks... This is Stumpy Nat, by the way. If Arya and Liara throw down, who do you think would win? And Arya, of course, for those that aren't big Mass Effect fans, is the crime boss of Omega.
Yeah.
Of Omega. So I guess the question, I'll ask Scott this question because I think you guys know my answer.
Well, real quick, I think it was her. I don't remember. Somebody tweeted you saying that... Ash, they're like, oh, Ash is a Liara lover just like me, and I almost got defensive and I had to retweet to her like, oh, it's Matt, I loved Liara too. I didn't love anybody else. Only Scott's the stupid one that left his Liara. I thought you slept with somebody else.
That's another question.
We'll some exploratory fashion.
This is on the side.
Anyways, so go ahead, Scott.
I really do think it would be Liara. Because she has this sort of like surliness that has started to emerge from, you know, from her transition from Mass Effect 1 to 2. You know, because you in 1, you rescue her and she's kind of, you know, kind of worried about things and scared of everything. And she kind of like learns to deal with it. And then by Mass Effect 2, she's kind of got like this attitude. And it just makes me feel like the strength of her personality and sort of like this kind of attitude and like, you know, if you read the comics of, you know, her recovering Shepard's body, I think it would be her.
The only thing that makes it hard to answer this is that Arya, we never really saw fight.
No, we didn't.
We just heard her talk the talk. We never actually saw her do anything. And Liara, we saw throw down on multiple occasions.
Yeah.
And could, you know.
There's got to be a reason why Arya is... the crime boss of Omega.
Oh, yeah,
which
of course.
Is the baddest place in the galaxy, you know, and no one is really standing up to her.
I think Arya versus Liara Mass Effect 1, Arya wins. Arya versus Liara Mass Effect 2, Liara wins.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying too. Liara, I think, changed a lot, especially in Shadowbroker. She's a little bit of a badass. So my money is on Liara. So good question. Thank you, Stumpy Nat. We appreciate it very much.
So, Midtown 583, Justin Banks is also another common, person. He's on our Facebook a bunch. Who will you romance in Mass Effect 3? Scott.
I've actually tried not to read anything about Mass Effect 3. So I honestly don't know anything about Mass Effect 3. And I guess I prefer to keep it that way.
All right.
But I mean,
assume that everyone is in it.
Let's say it's the same cast as Mass Effect 2.
Sure. I mean, like I as far as my main playthrough is concerned, I did stay faithful to Liara.
Oh.
But I Tally that she's
an option again.
She is competing for my affection, let me just put it that way. I'm sorry, Allie Hillis, to say that.
My main character, I'm going to stay faithful to Liara, of course. I did a Renegade playthrough where I romanced Miranda. Something's leading me to think that Miranda's not going to be an option in Mass Effect 3.
Really?
I don't know. I just have an idea that she won't be. But if that is not a possibility, probably
the Shadow Broker.
Probably the Shadow Broker,
or the Elusive Man.
Yeah, yeah. I will definitely go for the Elusive Man. No, I'll go for probably Tally. Yeah, Tally.
I will stay faithful to Liara.
There you go.
I'm like you fuckers. I have one true playthrough. That's what I roll with. And Tali actually was an option for me in Mass Effect 2, and I turned her down to stay with Liara. Without knowing that I was going to get Liara too, because the DLC wasn't available yet.
What happened was after reading the two of the novels, stuff that happens in one of those novels is sort of like built upon in Mass Effect 2, and so like I kind of had this attachment because one of the novels is really a lot about like what's going on in Tali's world. So,
all right, next question.
This is from Brandon Cash 23. And what are the most important gaming accessories for you? Custom controllers, headsets, gaming eyewear, or gaming gloves? Do you guys think any of this stuff is actually important?
What are I didn't know gloves? Gaming gloves existed.
Yeah, they do.
I am now interested in this.
Wow.
They're like fingerless bad boys.
Ah.
Yeah. For like,
so I can feel like I'm a warrior while I'm playing.
Yeah. You know, or you're in the movie The Wizard with Fred Savage and you whip out the fucking power glove. You know, I hadn't ever worn gaming eyewear until Comic-Con.
Yeah. Did you wear the Gunner stuff?
I wore the Gunner stuff.
Tell me what gaming eyewear is.
It's basically a pair of glasses that are designed to lessen eye strain for long periods of gaming.
Yeah.
And they're non-prescription, but they're polarized in a special way so it doesn't alter the image at all. But
I thought they did pull focus a little closer.
Because I
wear them for computer.
Do you?
Not Gunners, but I wear eyeglasses for... I'm like 20/20 vision, but because I work at a computer all day, I have prescription glasses that I wear to use at the computer, and they basically just like soften the focus.
Oh, okay. Maybe they do.
I think they do.
I thought they were just headache prevention.
I probably need to learn more about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're good.
They're cool. I would probably say headset. Because my wife, she plays games in the same room as me, which is about the nerdiest thing ever.
Sweet.
I kind of have to wear a headset, and I've grown pretty used to playing with it.
I feel like I don't own any of these. Well, actually, so I was gonna say headset because that's the next thing that I've been thinking about getting is a good headset that has good audio and like better microphone on it. But I just realized I own a custom controller and use the shit out of it for every fighting game that I ever play.
Oh, there you go.
Your
Street Fighter stick.
I have a fight stick, and I think that actually is probably pretty important to me because I don't know that I can play fighting games without it.
Yeah.
So I might go custom. My fight stick is probably my thing.
I'm a fan of first party accessories. So like, I'm not really like interested, like, you know, maybe the exception is with Rock Band where like Mad Cat's made everything. I am not a fan of that first party accessory. That was not a winner for me, but I don't really like to buy like if there's
I held
like
up the Bluetooth.
Yeah, the headset. Bluetooth Microsoft headset. I think they're making a new one actually.
Anyways, go ahead.
So I mean, yeah, as far as console gaming goes, like I just like the first party stuff because I expect it to work and it usually does. Mm-hmm. And then as far as the PC goes, I'm left-handed. So for me, what is important is like an ambidextrous mouse because I don't really think there are a lot of left-handed mouse options. And then I guess the other part of that equation is the keypad because being left-handed, you mouse with left and you map everything over to the keypad and kind of rock like, you know, calculator style.
So you're going PC accessories.
I'm just saying like because I don't have no custom stuff for console. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
So next question is from a frequent guest, Physics for Poets, which is Ryan. How many nerdy female celebrities did you get to interview, Ash?
I actually didn't do any official interviews while
this
I was
this is very tongue-in-cheek, by the way, the people who are listening aren't Ryan or the three of us.
A lot of people give me flack because they're like, oh, all you ever interview is hot chicks on the site. Why do you do that? Are you some sort of perv? Well, to answer, I am a perv, but
clearly,
it's not really, it might be subconscious, but it's not conscious. I ask a lot of people for interviews, and it just so happens that females are the ones who end up saying yes. I have asked a lot of dudes that have never replied to me. I maybe need to change like, hi, this is Tiffany from Nerd Appropriate.
Yeah.
Please do. So I don't know what to do about
that. We have a couple dude ones that didn't make it. We had the one from the show that got canceled.
Yeah, but I don't think we ever got that back.
I thought you did get it back.
No.
We got it back, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And then we had the comedian from the show.
We should do that because that show's about to go on.
That's the one that, we should put that on because the show's about to go up.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I did run into pretty much everyone we've ever interviewed.
That's awesome.
And they were all pretty damn cool. Cool. I said hi to all of them. They were all very, you know, really, really nice.
So let me get this straight. We sent you over to Comic-Con with per diem on NA dollars.
Yeah.
And you conducted no interviews.
Did you like the joke I made on the site that said we literally sent Ash to Comic-Con to no expense to us?
Yeah.
Then I was like, no, seriously, he is 100% out of pocket on this.
Yeah, absolutely. No, everyone was really cool. Hayslip was really cool. Kerry Keegan was really cool.
That's awesome. Kerry Keegan in the Voltron outfit I saw.
Yeah. Chrissy didn't like that very much. I was like, I have to go see Kerry Keegan. She's down by Voltron. And she's like, oh, she's in a tight.
And we should also say that Ryan asked that question because he's mad at you for saying that he should not be on the podcast.
I didn't. All right. To clarify, in episode 29, I started out by saying, hey, guys, when I'm gone, you should maybe have Amy on instead of Ryan.
Which we respected your wishes and had Amy on.
Oh, geez.
The real reason was because we all went and saw Harry Potter that weekend. So we were like, Amy makes sense to have on because Ryan doesn't watch any of those. And that was like the big happening that weekend. But
Yes. So yeah, I love Ryan.
And I hate Ryan.
I think he's great on the podcast. I was just totally being what I thought was funny.
So next up we have, oh good Lord, Misha Beans.
And she, it took me a minute to understand this question, but I get it now.
She wants to know if Mass Effect 1 squads, mainly the VS, will notice if your class has changed. So if you get that question.
I get the question.
I think the question is asking if your buds from ME1 show up and you've changed your class.
Are they going to notice?
Are they going to be like, hey, you were a Vanguard before.
Do we know any of this?
You're an engineer.
We actually don't have the official answer
for this. Or is she asking for Mass Effect? Oh, no, Mass Effect 3.
So she's saying basically if Ashley or Kaiden show up, which they are.
They will.
It's already been revealed.
Yeah.
Are they going to know if you were, you know, a Sentinel before and now you're a Vanguard?
Don't they kind of treat that like we do with D&D where it's just like, this guy was that all along, you know? Like,
yeah.
Can they really
My money is on them not noticing because I don't think it's really
I don't think
the story.
The role of your character has ever really played like a role of like...
I think it affects how you play.
But not like as far as the narrative goes, it doesn't...
Right.
No one has ever like...
I don't know, although that would be kind of ridiculously awesome if they did tie that in somehow.
If they were like, Shepard, you the master of unlocking... or something like that.
Yes.
So next question. Let's fly through. We got two more. We're gonna do two more.
And these are last minute entries. Let's see. Goodbye Tonight, who actually won our Twitter contest.
She did. She's getting an Omni tool.
She is.
By the way, where the fuck's my Omni tool?
It's at my house. I got one for you guys. I know. You want them really badly. So Goodbye Tonight asks, thoughts on BioWare saying squad members won't be permanent in Mass Effect 3? By this question, I think she's referring to the fact that squad members from Mass Effect 2 may only get cameo appearances in Mass Effect 3. I wrote an article a long time ago about this saying, like, I just want a massive cast of, like, everybody.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, you do that suicide mission, you want everybody
that made it. Yeah.
Right.
But I kind of changed my tune. I think that, you know, to have a nice, clean, strong narrative, it would be possible to have some of those characters on the sidelines. I mean, they already said everybody, even like Zaid and Kasumi. They're going to be back in some capacity. They're not going to just disappear from the story, but it might just be like you run into them at a bar or something happens.
But, I mean, like if you were to take the question at face value, if you remember like old JRPGs, that was sort of like a tenet of those games is that like party members would come and go,
right?
Like, you might have somebody through the first half of a game and then like they leave, like they take all of their equipment with them and then you just kind of forge on. Whether they die or you kick them out or something like that.
Yeah.
It would be kind of cool like if you played half of the game with like a ME2 squad member and then they get replaced with like a Mass Effect 1 squad member for some bizarre plot reason or
whatever. And, you know, who knows who's going to live and who's going to die? I mean, they've pretty much shown you throughout the course of this game that
they have no care for who they kill off.
Yeah. I mean, they really don't.
They'll do it.
They'll probably just waste your love interest just for being your love interest.
So the final question, I just tweeted out saying we've got 30 more seconds. I don't think we got any more in. So the final question, appropriately from Mass Effect Forever.
Big fan. He's a big fan.
Said, I've heard a ton of people complaining about the blonde femme Shep in ME3. Do you think they will change it because of this?
No, I think that if they do not pick whoever won through Democratic vote, they're going to face a shitstorm.
There's definitely more backlash from going against the vote than there is from dealing with the people who think blonde people are dumb.
Yeah, I think is a very vocal minority.
Yeah.
Again, I think people are just going to pull out their collector's edition, flip it over, go, huh, put the disc in and then change their character.
And make whatever they want.
Import
anyways.
Their Mass Effect 1 or 2 characters.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting. I think Mass Effect, I think BioWare is probably looking at it and going like, huh, that I don't think, like you just said, I think it's a vocal minority.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask a question real quick.
No. get on Twitter and tweet it.
Do you think that you will be able to take a Mass Effect 1 save into Mass Effect 3 if for some bizarre reason you did not play the second game?
I'm going to go with no.
I'm going to go with no also.
Okay, good.
I think that you will have to have gone through Mass Effect 2 to have a save for Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, and I think it's just a 2 save.
I think you could go through 2 to 3 without playing 1.
Correct.
Definitely.
Because you can build that backstory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to give you... And you probably can even pick up 3 without playing 2 or 1.
Yes.
But...
I agree.
I don't think you're going to be able to just skip.
Okay, cool.
Thank you guys so much for tweeting to us. We're going to try and do this maybe, you know,
and,
every few podcasts.
We had a request, and I don't mind doing this while you talk about Comic-Con. We're going to tweet out the answers real quick to all the...
Okay.
I'll retweet the questions and then write the answer to it.
And we do sounds talk good. About other things other than Mass Effect.
Nope. So let me look over the podcast notes. It was all Mass Effect.
A whole lot of Mass Effect.
Not that we don't get tired of talking about it. We're just...
Actually, I tweeted out right probably about halfway through the questions. I said, here's what we actually talked about tonight, if that helps. And then that spawned 3 more Mass Effect questions.
Of course.
We did talk about Mass Effect tonight, though.
Not a problem.
Blonde femship.
Of course.
All right. So let's get into it, Ash. Let's just get into it.
All right.
Just put on your waders. Let's get in the mud and talk about Comic-Con 2011.
Comic-Con 2011. So I did like a little short list, and I'm just going to kind of fly through these, and you guys can ask me questions if you want to. The first thing, I wrote a little article about this before Comic-Con, called Nerd HQ Breaks the Mold. And by the mold, I meant that, you know, San Diego Comic-Con, you show up at Comic-Con, you have 125 to 130,000 people, you know, kind of surrounding you. And they're all fans of all different things, you know, from comic books to, you know, TV shows to video games. Basically, every type of nerd exists at Comic-Con. What Nerd HQ did is it said, you know what, like, Comic-Con's gotten really big. What we want to do is have our own panels off-site, and we want to... charge money for each panel, but in charging money, it's actually a donation to I believe it's Project Smile, and Project Smile is to help kids with cleft palates. So by buying a ticket to these panels, you're actually donating to charity, and the panels are guaranteed to be very small in size. So you have maybe 150 people in a really small room.
What did you have to do to acquire these tickets?
Basically, it's run by Zachary Levi, who's the star of Chuck. And he is in charge of a company called the Nerd Machine. And Nerd Machine just sells like clothes and like iPhone cases. And basically, he just wanted to start his own like nerd company because he's, you know, into games and into stuff like that. And he figured, hey, this will be a fun side project. So all you had to really do is pay attention to his Twitter feed and go on the Nerd HQ site or the Nerd Machine site when the tickets went on sale, and you could buy the tickets directly through the website as soon as they went on sale. And as you can imagine, 150 tickets, you know, they went relatively quickly.
Just evaporated.
Yeah. The site crashed, you know, a couple times during the course of the day, and it's just sort of a massive explosion of stuff. But it was kind of one of those situations when I got tickets to 2 of the panels. One was called Friends of the Nerd Illusion, and the other one was sort of a Firefly reunion panel. And the Friends of the Nerd Illusion started off being Zachary Levi and just his friends. So we didn't really know, you know, who all was going to be there or anything like that. It was kind of, you know, I don't want to say hush-hush, but I don't think it had been decided upon yet. So we got tickets for those. And I didn't think it was one of those things where, oh, is this actually ever going to happen? Like, you know, because a lot of stuff in Comic-Con tends to evaporate or fall apart.
Sure.
Or the line will be too long, or like it'll get canceled, you know. And this being the first year they ever did this at Nerd HQ, I was like, there's a very high probability this isn't actually going to go through. But it did. And when we got there, they kept adding more and more people to the roster, and it turned out being Jorge Garcia, who was
Hurley
from Lost, yep. And Danny Pudi from Community, Zachary Levi from Chuck, and Allison Hayslip from G4, Olivia Munn from G4, and Alessandra Torresani from Caprica. That was the lineup. About 100 people in the room. 150 Torresani. People in the room. Yeah,
Torresani.
150 people in the room, and both Christine and I are like 5 feet away from these people that we watch literally like everything that they're in. So it was a little surreal. It was definitely strange. They recorded the panels, and they're like, it was basically there was no moderator, so they're like, all right, it's all just Q&A. So it's 150 people in the room, and like all these people up on stage, and they're like, all right, let's get it started, and everyone just sat there. And no one said anything. And they're like, all right, let's get started. So finally, I just fucking stood up and I asked the first question.
Did they tell people to ask questions or did you
just... Yeah, they told people to ask questions, but everyone was too shy because it's like you're in this room and you're just staring at like...
And they're just staring back at you?
They're just staring back at you.
There was no like, welcome to the panel. We're going to kind of like, if you got questions about... You just kind of...
Well, I mean, there was. Zachary Levi, you know, he must have had like teleportation skills because I saw the guy 100 times during the convention and he literally was just like hanging out downstairs at Nerd HQ the entire time. Like you could just like walk up to him and hang out with him, which was kind of bizarre if you're a Chuck fan. But so yeah, I asked the first question and I asked something to the effect of, you know, why do you think something like Nerd HQ can exist and why do you think nerd culture is becoming more socially acceptable? And it was actually Olivia Munn, my arch nemesis, who answered the question.
What?
Yeah. She actually answered my question. And she told a really cool story about growing up and being Asian and things like that. So all in all, Nerd HQ is awesome. I did get a chance to talk to Zachary Levi, not in an official interview capacity. But I did talk to him for a little bit. And I told him, like, hey, like you need to do this every year. This is what Comic-Con needs to be like. Please do this every year. And he was very appreciative of that. And he's going to try and bring Nerd HQ back every year. But my question for you, since this has been, I know you guys have been tweeting, but my question for you,
I've just been answering all the questions.
Oh, cool. Awesome. My question for you is if Comic-Con existed a la carte and you could buy, cause Comic-Con tickets now are $175. If you could buy 8 panel tickets for $20 each and go to 8 panels, guaranteed seating, your seat is given to you. Not have to wait in line.
Let me preface something for Scott. Imagine what we did to get into the Robot Chicken panel being twice as bad and all day long, every panel you want.
I'm not going to lie. There are very few things that I would sit in a line like that to do. And I didn't even want to sit in the Robot Chicken line. And you were just kind of like, hey, let's grab a beer. We'll sit down.
But
and
then
do
it ended up being awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying even still.
Not a panel guy. There's a lot of people that aren't panel people.
But if, like you said, if I could just pay money to get a guaranteed seat into a panel, like that would change my
Seats opinion. Were numbered. It's like you got your ticket, you're seat 15, you go sit in seat 15 and that's it.
But even to build upon that, like just the fact that there were activities that were off-site this year, like if all of the gas lamp became Comic-Con and you could just kind of roll into like different clubs or venues or whatever and different stuff was going on, like that kind of has some appeal to me also.
Yeah.
So I think this leads into 2 points that I wanted to ask real quick, and we don't have to stick super long on these points because I know you got more. But do you think the issue with Comic-Con now in San Diego is a branding issue? Do you think it just shouldn't be Comic-Con? It should just be like movies and fun things con. Like it's so much like, more than comics.
Do you think that there are comic fans that are like, what the hell?
Well, there happened? Are. I mean, that's not even questionable.
Do you think those people are like, what the hell happened to my convention?
Yeah.
Like,
but I mean, and the point I made in the article that I posted when I said, oh, Ash is there and he's going to be posting stuff all week or whatever, was that if your gripe with Comic-Con is that it's not about comics anymore, there's like a billion other Comic-Cons out. Like New York is probably the next biggest.
Yeah.
And it's still pretty comic centric. Chicago's got one, Emerald City. I mean, I could name a million of them. There's a ton of Comic-Cons that are very comic-centric. So do you think San Diego just needs to be like, hey, maybe we should just rebrand? Or do you think it's so indelled or so imbued in the culture now as being Comic-Con that they can't rebrand?
I don't think, I think it's a just a massive money issue. I think that everyone that goes to Comic-Con and represents themselves in some way benefits from being there. So I don't think they want to not show up. But I also think that, you know, it has gotten too big. And this year they haven't officially revealed it, but I just know from being there that they did sell less tickets on purpose this year.
Right.
There were less people than.
Yeah. And I heard people felt like that too. Yeah. But people also, and we talked about this beforehand, people felt weird because there weren't a lot of A-list movies. There was a lot of TV, and the games weren't really huge there. The comics, there weren't even, like, DC had the big thing that they had already, which is weird. DC had announced their big event before Comic-Con. Like, they announced their 52, you know, a month ago before it ever hit Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Marvel came with a couple of announcements as far as the Ultimate lines and the renewals and stuff, which everybody's making fun of them, saying that they weren't going to have anything. And then they had these couple of things. But it's just, it's really interesting to me to see this happening to Comic-Con. I feel like they don't know what to do right now.
So I'm all for a la carte panels and such.
So really, it's good overall. Your
Nerd
experience
HQ was awesome. Firefly panel was awesome. You know, it was just a great time.
Was that just an hour of people going like, when is that second movie going to happen? Like,
never.
Firefly was a little bit of that, and it was definitely a lot of, you know, like, not to sound like a dick, but when you have like really like hardcore fans of like a show or something, they tend to forget that the actors are actors and not like that Jewel State isn't like Kaylee. So like, how do you fix a Firefly class engine? And they're like, you know, and she's just like, well, you know, I don't really know. I'm not Kaylee. And then, you know, someone will ask, you know, Adam Baldwin, like, so when you got shot in the leg with a harpoon in Serenity, who stitched your leg? It's like, really, dude?
Yeah.
It's not reality. So there was a lot of that. Overall, it was a fun experience.
So you played Mass Effect 3.
I did.
That's all anyone cares about right now.
Yeah, I got to play it, and I'm going to sound like a total dick right now. But I was in the line, and then I saw Ali Hillis. And I was, and
you
I was
pulling
like,
a favor.
No, well, I was like, "Hey, what's up?" And I hung out and talked to her for a while. And she's like, "What are you here for?" And I was just like, "I'm here to say hi, and you know, I'm going to play Mass Effect 3." She's like, "You're waiting in line to play?" I was like, "Yeah, I don't have press credentials for Comic-Con." I'm like, "They wouldn't give me press credentials; we're too small." And she's just like, "Hold on a second. Bypass the whole fucking line." I got like literally 500 stink eyes. Like, everyone's just like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
And so Christina and I got moved to the front of the line.
That's cool.
And it was awesome. It was really, really super cool of her. And we played it. And
voice command set up or no?
No, not with Kinect.
Okay.
I'm not going to give away any plot because I know Scott really would punch me in the throat. But I can talk about gameplay. Awesome.
Did they refine Mass Effect 2?
They refined Mass Effect 2. They didn't recreate, you know, they didn't recreate the wheel, as they say, but everything is a lot smoother. The guns have this great, I always talk about feel, but they feel like they had this.
Did they feel like you were holding a space gun?
They did. They definitely felt like I was holding a space gun. And I know they worked with DICE to get gun feel for this game.
Did they really?
They really did. They worked with
DICE. That is impressive.
They brought in, for the sound effects for the guns and for the feel of the guns, they brought in DICE.
Wow.
And they
but are they going to make that money back?
I don't know. But now you can do things like SWAT turns. Like if you're on cover, you can just like press to the left and hit your move to next cover button. So basically you'll do like a SWAT turn from cover to cover.
Awesome.
Yeah. And like,
that's all Gears, right? Gears kind of.
Yeah. It's pretty Gears.
Much as I make fun of Gears, their cover system is like bar none the best.
It's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. There's now I got to try out the new melee combat, which is pretty freaking sick.
So did you get to like stab people with your
I got
Omni
to
tool?
Actually stab someone with an Omni blade. Works pretty damn well. It works pretty damn well.
Awesome.
I also got to try out the Adept, who had like a psychic sword, which is pretty awesome. So each class has their own individual heavy melee. Grenades are back. And they're more like they're not like the flying coasters from Mass Effect 1. That
right. Oh yeah,
remember the old discs? Yeah. They could go all the way across the fucking.
I love those. Oh, those are so good.
They are now like traditional grenades.
You know who I think did alien grenades the best is, and as much as you might hate this, is I think Halo.
Oh, the
with the
plasma?
Sticky grenades.
Those
were
great.
Those
were
the best.
No, I agree.
Alien grenades
those
ever made.
Those were great grenades. What else about the general gameplay? your squad is insanely powerful. I don't know the point in the story where I was, but you know, I was with Liara, and I was.
I think they always, these demo games though, they always put you at a point where you're not going to lose. They're like, oh, like, yeah, look, everybody's really awesome here already.
Yeah, so. It's pretty true. I was with Liara and Garrus, and we literally just like obliterated everything. Like Singularity just was like tossing shit all over the map, and I was having a blast with that. One thing I should point out is the skill trees have gotten a lot deeper from Mass Effect 2.
Oh, cool.
So for instance, let's say. And this is going to be a really bad example. Because
they didn't really feel like skill trees in 2 to me. I mean, like they were, but it kind of felt random. Like you could just do whatever you wanted. It didn't really matter.
And they didn't go very deep. It's like, okay, do I want cryo ammo? It's like, I guess I'll put all my points in cryo ammo.
Yeah, like it didn't.
Well, for this, like you can do cryo ammo, but then you can do like, I want cryo ammo duration and I want like cryo ammo lethality. And like it basically, the trees branch.
That's cool.
Like Dragon Age 2?
Yeah. So cool. You can, yeah. And. Hopefully they actually set it up a little bit more like Dragon Age 2 because I like the way those trees work. This one was a little confusing and I think it only existed for the demo purpose.
Yeah.
But they actually did give you some time to set up your points and everything beginning. So, I got to play through almost twice, 2 full playthroughs.
Did it visually look better than 2?
Yeah, it was pretty nice. It was pretty nice.
Because 2 looks good. 2 has some weird, like the hands and the mouth kind of gets weird at times. But.
Yeah. No, it looked great. You know, there wasn't, I don't think, as drastic of a jump from 1 to 2, from 2 to 3. I think it looks
a
lot
to
like 2.
Yeah, 1 to 2 was huge. But is this the same engine, though? They didn't rebuild the engine, did they?
I think they just
made it better.
Built
it
up. Yeah, I don't think it's an all new engine.
Yeah,
but yeah, overall, we're not going
to
be disappointed.
Did you get to do any mining?
No mining.
It's overhauled again, isn't it? Like, didn't they?
Yeah, they're
going to
redo.
Oh,
they just can't let that go. Somebody at that company is like,
I loved mining in 2, man. You loved mining in 1. I loved mining in 2.
Yeah,
I never loved mining.
Just want to drive that Mako around for another 20 hours.
Fucking that Mako. Oh, so how were the ground aliens?
Oh, so yeah. So another thing, I'm totally up Nerd HQ's ass, but Nerd HQ is like, hey, just come by and hang out and play some games. They had like Dragon's Dogma set up, which isn't even close to coming
out. That's the new Capcom game.
The new Capcom is just sitting there.
Oh, Jesus.
No line or anything like that. Dragon's Dogma sitting there. They had like, you know,
that's
Capcom
like
was
into next year, isn't
it? And it was just there. You could like sit there and eat a sandwich and play Dragon's Dogma. I don't know what the fuck was going on, but. And upstairs, there is a booth set up with 5 linked consoles with Gears of War Horde mode. No wait.
Wow.
The line for Gears of War Horde mode on the Comic-Con floor was about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Yeah.
So no wait. Chrissy and I just walk up like, let's play some Horde mode.
Gears 3?
For Gears 3.
Yeah.
So she and I sit down and she's actually a really good Gears player. And it's just her and I playing through, and then they have drop in, drop out now for Horde mode. 3 strangers come in and start playing with us. And dude,
fun.
Yeah. I mean, we've played Horde together.
Yeah.
And
I love
Horde is a blast, but imagine Horde with like a little bit of tower defense added to it.
Oh, really?
So now
you can set up like choke points and things like that.
Turrets. You can set up barbed wire. You can set up decoys.
That's cool.
You can set up,
cause that's the kind of thing with Horde, but. So that made it more fun to you because I guess it's more tactical.
Yeah.
Part of the thing with the Horde is just like shitting your pants and running. Like, crap coming at you from all sides.
Exactly. At no point did I ever feel like, oh, we have this area locked down. Yeah. We're awesome. It was still like they just upped the stakes. So you have extra shit, but there are just that many more enemies.
That's cool.
And so they have it set up so you could play through 10 waves. And on the 10th wave now is a boss wave.
Yeah.
And I shit you not. You remember the Berserker? Did you ever play it?
Yeah.
Well, now they have a Lambent Berserker, and Lambents are like basically when the locusts get infected with this essentially a virus, they
Is
become
that from 2?
Yeah, they become like
I don't know that.
I know volatile, and
we'll
explosive.
Get there. Let's finish. We'll finish that
and tougher. And so we had to face off against a Lambent Berserker for the wave 10. And I kid you not, it took our whole team of 5 people. Probably about 25 minutes of constant combat to take down the Lambent Berserker. And we're talking like, you know, every gun in the game that we could find firing at this fucking thing.
Until you run out of bullets.
Yeah, we run out of bullets, but now it's like you get money for kills. So like you can run around the map and like
Wait, did they introduce like a upgrade mechanic?
Not necessarily an upgrade mechanic, but like, let's say for instance, you just kill like five drones, you'll get like $500. That's how you buy your barbed wire that you put down between matches. So it's not unlimited. You can't just like build a wall of turrets.
That's how you have like, so you have access to all of it. You just can only buy whatever you buy.
Whatever you can afford. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
that's cool. As long as it's not like an unlocking for playing more kind of thing.
No.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
No. So overall, Horde mode, awesome.
So, BioWare.
BioWare base.
Not to run you through this.
There's a lot of stuff. BioWare base. So yeah, like I said, BioWare had their main headquarters set up at the Hilton, which is literally across the street. They put on a whole bunch of different events. They had demos going of Dragon Age Legacy, Star Wars Old Republic, multiplayer versus you could play. And then, of course, Mass Effect 3 demo you could play. Lines for all those. The big things were the costume contest. Mm-hmm. Costume contest was judged by Allie Hillis and Holly Conrad from Crab Cat Industries and Casey Hudson, who's lead producer.
So Crab Cat wasn't taking part in the costume?
They weren't. They were judging this year, and they had all their costumes on display, and they were fucking awesome. They had a full-size Garrus. They had Holly Conrad was, of course, her renegade shepherd, and they had... They had a Rex this year, which was pretty ridiculous.
I think you tweeted it.
Animatronic Rex was pretty cool.
You tweeted something that looked awesome.
The Samara because the Samara, I walked up and I like had like a weird, like, I was like, what the fuck? And it was literally the actress's face that they scanned for Samara, painted as Samara just standing there. Like, I'll show you on my phone in a second, but it was kind of unreal because all of a sudden it looks identical to the real character from the game. But, costume contest was super cool. Some Dragon Age 2 cosplay won. They put a lot of time into it. Really awesome. Probably no less than, I want to say, 30 entries. We stayed for that. Fan art show was pretty cool. They had submissions, hundreds of submissions. I think they selected, I want to say, 167 different pieces of art from the fan community that they just had up on display in the BioWare base, and you can look at all the fan art and stuff like that. But the thing that blew my mind was, first of all, Axel99 had 7 of hers accepted into the art show, which was really, really cool. Big fan of her stuff.
Yeah.
And the guy that won, though, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but you've probably seen his stuff before. He's just like ridiculous. And they had him on Skype, and they're like, hey, you won the fan art contest. And he lives in Poland, and he's like super humble, seems like a super nice guy. And they're like, yeah, you won. And he's like getting choked up. He's like, oh, thank you so much. Yeah. That's my Polish accent.
That's really good.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're offending Scott.
Yeah.
Oh, you're Polish, huh? thank you so much. And he's like,
Osaki.
And they're like, hey, and since you won the fan art contest, you win a N7 hoodie signed by the entire staff. And he's like, oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy. And then they're like, and we're hiring you to work at BioWare. And he's like, dead silence. And the crowd just went fucking apeshit.
Wow.
Because here's just like a fan. And they're like, now you work as an artist for BioWare. Hired out of Poland.
So is he going to be doing concept art?
Concept
stuff
art for BioWare. That's an awesome way to treat your fans.
Can he work from home? I mean, does he have to come to...
I don't know how that's going to work out.
I'm sure they'll let him work from Poland.
Yeah, but that's pretty freaking ridiculous.
And that's amazing.
That's really cool.
Good for him.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I got like nerd bumps and like...
Yeah.
If you listen to the audio playback from... Because they recorded it, you'll hear me be the first one going... Whoa! and then like everybody else joined in, but I like had like a fan spaz out.
That's cool.
And the last thing was the big FemShep reveal. They did the Mass Effect March, where they equipped all of us nerds with Omniblades, and they timed it the same time as the Zombie March on purpose, so that the Mass Effect March would
clash. Pictures were awesome.
They were pretty funny. We clashed with the Zombie March, and so we actually ran into all the zombies. And at the end, they brought everybody upstairs, and they're like, hey, you know, the reason why you're here, Jennifer Hale's here, and we're going to reveal the FemShep contest, you know, where you get to decide between the
I totally there. Thought I leaked something because they had said everybody's going to get an Omniblade.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, it's in the picture or something like that. Because somebody tweeted back to you and said, hey, you know, what can you give us a hint as to what it's going to be about? And you're like, it's in the picture. And I was like, it's on her arm because everybody was getting an Omniblade.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, I'm not supposed to tell. And I was like, oh, shit, did I just tell something that wasn't supposed to be said? But it wasn't that. It was the FemShep contest.
Yeah, we ran into Holly Conrad on the floor and we were like, hey, you know, what's going on with the march? And she told us, like, Jennifer Hale's going to be there. Da, 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 da. And I was just like, I have all this information that I am. I said to Chrissy, I'm like, should I tweet that she just told me what the big reveal is? And she's like, don't do it. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be that guy. So I kept my mouth shut.
The ticketing fiasco. I mean, I think we've kind of covered it somewhat, but basically,
yeah, I heard you say that you got up at 4:30 one morning to try to buy tickets for next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't a joke.
And
yeah.
They blocked off tickets every day. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I think after that, I tweeted back to you. I was like, where's the line for 2013?
Yeah, seriously.
And let me go to that instead.
So yeah, they blocked off an X amount of tickets each day, right?
Yeah. So what they did is we found out it was,
I saw this.
4,800 tickets a day that they sold for next year. But the trick was you had to have a ticket for this year to get your ticket for next year.
It's like a season ticket now, almost like a legacy ticket.
It's so weird. And it's like, in order to get them, the tickets were supposed to go on sale from 8 till 11, not even at the San Diego Convention Center, at the hotel down the street. So you'd have to show up, you know, between 8 and 11, go buy your ticket. But once people found out, like, oh, between 8 and 11, people started showing up, like, the night before.
Like at midnight or something, yeah.
People were camping out. And so, like, we got wind on Twitter that was happening. And it would be, like, 6 a.m., and they'd be like, tickets are sold out. We're like, they're not even supposed to go on sale till 8.
Yeah.
There's so many people, they started the lines early to get it over with.
Wow.
So finally, like, it was Saturday afternoon, and I was like, Chrissy, like, if we're going to do this, like, I don't want to because I don't want to miss out on stuff on Sunday. But I'm like, I'm going to have to get up at like 3 a.m. and walk my ass down there and wait in line. And that's what we did. We got up at like 3:30, got down to the hotel at 4 and had our tickets by 9.
I feel like, and not to go on another nerd rage, I'm going to restrain myself, but I feel like I'm going to give them one more year.
Yeah.
And if by next year, this shit is not figured out, the only way I feel like this is going to get fixed is if people just stop going.
Yeah. And there's high probability that could happen.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's just like, this is so ridiculous that at some point people are just going to be like, your reaction, just like, well, fuck it then. Who cares?
Yeah,
I'll go to one of the other billion things I can go to that have the same stuff in it, you know, like, or the internet, which provides me with all of that.
That's true.
So I hope that they're over redesigning the site and we're going to fix the ticket thing. And I really hope it does because, like I said, I feel like it's a branding issue more than anything, but I don't know, man. It was ridiculous when I heard you did that. And I have to say, you actually got us tickets. So
I did.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
You prevented us from having to. My ninja. I literally was like a ninja online when I got us the tickets for this year that we ended up having to refund. But like, I bought them in the like 5 second window of when you could buy the tickets. I managed to get through like that quickly. And I think it's only because I'm on like a fucking crazy T1 connection at the university that I could refresh really fast.
Yeah. So for the last thing, I listed all the panels that I went to, except,
do you watch Sanctuary?
No, I don't.
Really?
I was just in the room for that panel.
Wow. What was after it?
I was camping it out. The Guild, Community, Sanctuary.
I do want to talk.
Frank Miller and Attack of the Show were all in the same room.
That's awesome. And you can talk about it if you want to, but I think next week I want to talk about the Guild itself because the new episodes are out.
So. Sounds good. Yeah.
Can I ask you one question about the Sanctuary panel?
Absolutely. That's why I put it on there.
Okay.
You watch Sanctuary?
Oh yeah. Religiously. Oh, okay. Yeah. You don't follow the show, but Magnus has a daughter who I think disappeared like somewhere around the second season. Did anybody ask about that?
Nobody asked about that. This is the second year in a row I've seen Sanctuary panels
without watching the show.
And I've never seen the show, but
it's a lot of fun.
I have to say the main actress, she's kind of
Amanda Tapping.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sort of
British,
probably. She's actually not British.
She's not. That's
a fake accent.
Because she was on Stargate, I think, is where.
Yeah. She's awesome. She's really, really funny.
It's kind of like her show. I think she's like, sort of executive producer.
The guy, I don't know anything about him, but the main actor, kind of actory.
Oh, really?
He's like, hey, I'm an actor. I live in Hollywood.
What's weird is that I think that some of the other people they bring on are like totally in the like thespian kind of world. Like,
oh,
the
really?
People that play, there's a guy that plays, oh my God, Tesla.
Oh, really?
And a guy that plays, the bald guy who, he plays Jack the Ripper, and he was in, a couple episodes of Caprica, and, he's in a bunch of stuff. He's like a tall guy. Like, he may have been bald or not bald, but he's like a tall, skinny guy.
I don't know.
Probably British.
I don't know.
Did they only have like the main? Who was in that panel? Like the main three?
Just
or four?
The main two.
Oh, just the
just
two?
Just the
of them?
Two, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
But it was good. That was good. It was fun.
How was the Frank Miller one?
I
he's
started,
a crotchety old man by now. By
I
way.
Started tweeting something about this, and Chrissy made me delete it because she saw really? What I was writing. I love Frank.
Let it out.
Well, I love Frank Miller's stuff.
Yeah.
But like I've seen a lot of people that are on drugs in my life, like bad drugs. Frank Miller is not a healthy dude. I'm just going to go on record and say it. I don't know, like I tried to look up if like I didn't want to be an asshole. I'm like, does he have cancer? He is like he was fucking so sick looking in this really? Panel, dude. I don't know what it was. I don't know, like he looks like he maybe weighs like 115 pounds right now. Like he shuffled out, like he could barely walk wow. up to the front. And I was like,
I haven't heard about anything.
I haven't either.
Sick,
and so. I was like looking up, like, does he have cancer? Like right. what the hell is wrong with Frank Miller? I felt horrible.
Yeah.
He was distant. He was aloof. Like, you know, the panel would be talking and he would be like, what was the question? Just like out of it, dude, out wow. of it. Holy Terror, the book that he was there plugging, looks pretty cool. He actually kind of revealed a little secret. It actually started out being a Dark Knight book, and then he was like, I don't want to work with
DC.
Well,
he was supposedly
anymore.
Working on a Dark Knight title
yeah, and
like
he,
a long time ago.
He changed the character from Batman to this new character, kind of called the Holy Terror, and has a different backstory. Kind of looks a little bit like Batman without the wing ears.
Is he drawing and writing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. So Frank Miller was pretty interesting. And I hope that he is well and he just was having a bad night or something.
Blair Herder was made a comment. This ties very loosely, but I watched the post Comic Con. What's the podcast we all listen to that they do? That
Feedback?
Yeah. And Blair Herder was on. And he talked about how he found it really depressing that Twilight, you know, has like a 12-hour wait to get into their panel and see everything. And that Todd McFarlane did like an opus on how to animate and draw like characters. And there was 50 people on the panel.
Oh, really?
he said he saw this Todd McFarlane panel that was like, you walked out of it with basically a master's degree in how to draw and animate characters and why things were done certain ways. And that there was like 50 people on the panel and you walked out and the line to Twilight was like outside.
Yeah. Yeah. I follow Blair Herder's Twitter feed and he was an angry dude throughout the entire
con. He seemed
like
a pretty angry nerd.
Yeah. He was like, he was not having a jolly old time. Yeah. But
I don't know. They just made me think of that. Cause Todd McFarlane's another one of those names. I don't know if the Frank Miller panel, do you think it was packed due to what it was surrounded by? Or do you think it was?
Yeah, I think it was packed due to what it was surrounded by. Yeah. It was like padded on one side by the guild, another side by like Community or something like that. So it was, but you know,
Community panel as big a hit as it was last year.
Yeah, it was good. It was, they announced.
Did you tweet that Chevy was a little more talkative during this one?
He was actually very talkative and he was actually very thankful to the audience, which was kind of odd for Chevy. But there's a certain level of senility. Like, you can't really tell if he's doing his shtick or if Chevy Chase is just slightly senile.
He's pretty much always on, I will say, and has been since the 80s, 70s. Like, he never really turns it off. He's just kind of, like, always this aloof,
weird guy.
Yeah.
So, he was an aloof, weird guy. But but the cast was great. And, they did a lot of, you know, answered a lot of questions.
So Alison Brie was there in spirit. We hear she was tweeting.
Yeah, man. No Alison Brie.
I was following
shooting a movie.
I was following her tweets during the panel.
Me too.
While you were at the panel, I guess.
Yeah, she was not there, which was, I was kind of surprised.
She's shooting a movie, I think.
She's shooting, it's a rom-com, I think.
I don't know. I forget what it's called. But yeah, man, Community was great. And they love their fans. They're really good to their fans. So they just were a blast to see. And
so I'm going to give you 3 minutes to wrap up Comic-Con. Your feelings on Comic-Con.
My feelings on Comic-Con.
I didn't mean to hit the microphone there.
Comic-Con is perhaps the one place you can go where if you are a nerd, everything you could possibly ever want to see is under one roof. That being said, can be a little bit stressful, but my only word of advice if you're planning on ever going is just kind of realize that you will never be able to see everything and just enjoy what you can see and enjoy the experience. And don't forget to eat and have some good meals and hang out with your friends and have a jolly old time. But it was great. I'm glad I got to go again.
Was there anything we didn't highlight that you think is a must talk about or no?
Let's see. I saw Guild, which we'll talk about next week. Saw the Clone Wars panel, which was pretty cool because Team Unicorn showed up dressed as the Night Sisters, which was pretty cool.
I haven't had cable, so I haven't seen...
Oh, you haven't seen the Night Sisters?
I haven't seen two yet.
Oh,
two
and man.
Three. October 18th, season three comes out on Blu-ray, so
okay.
I'll be there.
You'll like the Night Sisters. They're awesome.
Cool.
Other than that, yeah, I think I pretty much went through it and fast forward. I'm sure I'll...
You had written that you were going to maybe go to one of the voice actor panels. Did you end up going?
I didn't go to that voice actor panel, but I did. I went to the Gears panel, and the Gears panel, by some freakish twist,
you were
of
sitting
fate,
like next to everyone that stood up. It looked like
I was sitting literally in my row.
They were like, then this guy, and you were like Isaiah Mustafa, and then they're like, then this guy. And
I
like,
was
take a picture of that guy too.
That's actually a pretty funny story. That's actually pretty quick. Like we had been in that room for a while, and they're setting up for the Gears panel, and we're just like, by that point, we're in the second or third row.
Yeah,
and they're like, you guys got to move. This is a you know, Microsoft's row,
right?
And I was just like, dude, I've been here forever. Da, 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 da. And he's like, what are you here for? And I was just like, I'm like, I'm on a website, like I'm covering. He's like, oh, your website? And I'm just like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm a website. He's like, okay, how many you guys have? We're like, three. And we're like, he's like, stay right here. And I'm just like, fuck.
Oh, nice.
Oh, fuck. And so like sitting next to me is Carlos Farrow, who's Dominique Santiago and his wife. Oh, and then awesome. To left of him is Isaiah Mustafa. And then to the left of Isaiah Mustafa is Morgan Webb. To the left of Morgan Webb is like the producer from X-Play. And to the left of them is fucking Coltrane. So I'm like this row with like...
Did you see the pictures? Like literally no. Every picture is Ash just turning left
no, I didn't
and
see.
Taking a
I
picture.
I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. It was cool. Pretty awesome for a fanboy. It was great. And Carlos Farrow, such a nice dude. The guy who plays
really?
Dominique Santiago. He's just like... Just a big kid, a big nerd. He's like, Microsoft made me grow my beard to look more like Dom's beard in Gears of War 3. He's like, I didn't want to. He's like, I'm cutting it off as soon as I get home. But
that's cool.
It was cool. That was a cool experience.
Well, that's because like the voice actors panel was one of those like I wandered into it and ended up being just like an awesome highlight of my trip to San Diego, which I think is the Comic-Con that I missed this year was that kind of shit. Like
smaller
just
ones.
Just wandering into something weird and then being like, this is awesome, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the fucking voice of half the Transformers was in the room, like doing the Transformers voices, and I was like, "What am I watching right now?"
Yeah.
Like,
and we saw the one at Celebration,
yeah,
and that's just phenomenal. Like, I'm never gonna, I'm gonna try not to miss those ever again.
Yeah.
But I agree, small panels are the way to go in the future.
Well, we have gone. This is going to be a really long podcast, but that's okay. We did some cool stuff. I love the Q&A. I think we're going to do that again.
Yeah, it was easy, and I'm glad people participated.
Yeah,
last minute, so that's cool.
That was fun, and then So we'll be back next week. We're definitely going to talk the Guild because I want to talk about the Guild.
Yeah,
because it's out.
Cool.
We all like the Guild.
What season are they on now?
Five.
I think I've got like two or three to catch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dude, you just go on Netflix, I think is the one.
And even Xbox Live.
Plays them all back to back.
So yeah,
you
I like
just
that.
Hit play
yeah.
And it just plays
like
the
movie.
Entire thing all the way back to back.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that. Are there any games? God, we're in like such fucking doldrums for games right now.
Yeah, we're like, this is like the lull right before the holiday explosion. So.
Yeah. Hopefully, if Attack the Block comes out this week somewhere in fucking Orlando, I'm going to go see that. That's the new... movie by Nick Frost.
Attack the Block looks rad.
I know, I want to see it, but it's not in release here.
No.
Which is weird because they had Nick Frost on one of our morning shows promoting Attack the Block and then didn't release it in the city.
Hopefully Enzian sucks it up.
Yeah, I'm hoping somebody picks it up here. So maybe we'll be able to talk about that and that'll be that. So this is 31. Ash is back.
Yeah, boy.
Fantastic.
Scott didn't say anything weird, so
Scott,
I don't know what we're
Scott's
gonna...
super excited. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm really glad you're back, Ash.
No,
fuck
I mean...
you. Fuck you, man.
this is cool. What do you want me to say? We're having a good time.
I want you to rub my foot.
What?
I don't know what's going on right now.
You just got your sound bite for the, for the podcast. Yeah,
I'm letting this play out.
Yeah.
I feel like we're on the couch with Dr. Phil.
I missed you guys so much. All right. Rated NA episode 31. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening.
Here comes the music.